Hey, what's happening, everybody? Welcome to the program. You are listening to The Jeff Gerstmann Show. And today is February 13th. I'm your host for this week's installment of the show. My name is Jeff Gerstmann. I'm here to host this time around. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. We've got some video games to discuss, some video game, some happenings in the video game world. It's been a weird, there's a weird X cloud hanging over video games right now over the last week. It's been this really weird, the vibes are off, if you will. As everyone tries to kind of dissect and figure out what the heck is going on with all of the Microsoft stuff and the Xbox multi-platform, not a ton of movement on that front. We'll get into that when we get into the news as to kind of the couple of things that have happened and things that will be happening in the relatively near future here. But it's been weird. I don't know. Less weird are the games. Oh, I don't know. Foam Stars. Foam Stars is kind of maybe a weird game. I've been playing a little bit of more Foam Stars here and there. I don't know how much more Foam Stars I'm going to actually play, though. It's fine. It's a good little diversion, I guess, is what I would say. But it's not the sort of thing. It's hard to envision anyone sticking with Foam Stars long term. You know, even if they added a bunch of modes and characters and like if they added more to the framework that they have created, it's hard for me to see it a scenario where Foam Stars really, really takes off. Some people have been really down on Foam Stars. I don't think that there's enough in Foam Stars to get really down on other than perhaps the price of some of the skins and some of that sort of stuff, which is, you know, they've got multiple characters in there, right? So you got to buy skins per character, right? And so it's like these $45 bundles for a skin and then a surfboard skin and a gun skin. And, you know, of course, you can buy them separately for less than $45. They have things in there that are like $3 or whatever, if that's more your speed. But there's just something about like, we've got a special deal for you, dog. It's a $45 skin for a character. By the way, only one person per team can play as this character. So if they choose this character first, you don't get to show everyone your expensive skins. I don't know. That is actually like to talk about Foam Stars is to talk about its it being a hero shooter, it being a character specific, you know, shooter. Loadouts are attached to the characters, the weapons, the abilities, all of that sort of stuff are tied to the individual characters, and so who you pick determines what type of gun you have and what type of abilities you use and all of that. I hate that. Because I will go into a game and I will start to get good at a single character. I'll go like, oh, this is the character I want to play as. This is the gun I like to shoot. These are the abilities I like to use. Oh, wait, someone chose this character first? Okay. Well, I guess I don't really know any of the other characters, so I'll just randomly pick one and hope for the best. Because I messed around with everyone in training and decided I didn't really like the other ones all that much. So this round, I guess I'm just asked out. And maybe I'll learn something, and maybe I'll learn to like another character, of course. But I just conceptually, when it comes to that style of shooter, and, you know, there have been years where Call of Duty did this back around Black Ops 4, which is, you know, a pretty low point for the franchise, I think. 3 and 4, kind of, you know, with some of the characters they used in there. Of course, you have something like an Overwatch at the other end of that too, where, you know, I got into who did I get into in Overwatch? I tried to play as was it May for a little while, and with the ice walls and all that stuff, and then I was like, I'm not great at this. And so I started playing as, let's call him Lucio? Is that his name? Dude, I don't know. names of Overwatch characters. And then eventually kind of stopped playing the game entirely. So, you know, whatever. But yeah, when games do that, Apex Legends does that in a lot of its modes as well, where it's just like, oh, I like to be able to be the healer and do this sort of stuff, and I'm okay at it, and blah, blah, blah. And then, by the way, someone else chose this character. And you're like, now that Apex has like a zillion more characters, maybe that's less of a big deal, assuming you own those characters, right? So you end up in that sort of situation where it's just like, I've put a lot of time into learning how to play this specific role this specific way, and now I can't for this round. So maybe should I quit? Like, what's the... Yeah, I don't know. Team comp, all that sort of stuff. It's annoying. As someone who just wants to jump into a game and play a game and doesn't play with, you know, like if I was playing with friends, then yes, we would all have our roles and we do this and blah, blah, blah. But like, that is not how I play video games. It is likely never going to be how I play video games. So stop making them do that. Foam Stars is on PlayStation Plus right now. It's only going to be on there this month, and then it's going to go up to, I believe, $30. Even now, I would be curious to see what the matchmaking times in Foam Stars look like, because there's two modes, and I definitely hit a wall in the second mode where it was like, this matchmaking is taking a little too long already, and this game just came out. It's got to feel bad. If you spend a lot of time making a game, like, what are the expectations? Like, when you set out on a project like Foam Stars, this would be my interview question, I guess, right? Is like, when you set out to develop a game like Foam Stars, and you kind of like, are you going into it going like, this is going to take the world by storm? This is going to knock some other game out of contention so that there are more people available to play our game instead because it's going to be that good. Because that's the calculus. That's the math, right? Is they have to go like, okay, like there's a competitive shooter landscape. There's this happening out there. Like ours is, you know, a little different, a little less violent, a little more like this. And, it, you know, it's got a whole different vibe to it. And that's going to be how it, you know, carves out its particular niche. People that are Splatoon curious but don't own a Switch, is that I don't know. That would be my curious thing. Is just like, what when you go into developing that game, when you're making that game, you have to believe that, right? Otherwise, why would you make it? Like, you know, if you're the leadership of the studio, if you're the producer, the executive producer, if you're the business people that greenlit the project, all of that sort of stuff, like what are your expectations for what it's going to do? Because Foam Stars is kind of doing about what I thought it would, right? You know, playing it back in June, I was like, this is better than I, you know, it seems at first glance, and it is. Because at first glance, I think it looks pretty bad. But it is a solid thing, you know? It's not perfect. It's got issues. But it works. It's, you know, it's a different style of shooter, whatever, you know? So playing it back in June, I was like, this game is at least different. And it made me curious to see how it would ship, what it would ship like, what state it would ship in, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I'm not crazy. I'm not sitting there going like, and this is going to take the world by storm. And this is, we're all going to be playing Foam Stars and talking about Foam Stars season passes for the years to come. No, right? I mean, no. So, and I don't mean to be a dick about it, right? You play that game and you're like, even though this game is all right, like there's a lot of very entrenched competitors in multiplayer gaming space. Whether that's, you know, and maybe they're not looking at it that way. Maybe they're going like, well, we're making this lower rated game. Like, you know, in their mind, they're not thinking that someone has to make the choice between like, am I going to play Call of Duty or am I going to play Foam Stars? I'm at a point where I would prefer Call of Duty, and I don't think that Call of Duty is having a particularly great year this year, but it's still a tested and proven formula that works quite well for what it is. And even if it's a little less exciting this calendar year than it has been in the past, it is still sort of that. So yeah, it's maybe they're not looking at it as like, we've got to go up against the literal one of the biggest games in the world every year for years, blah, blah, blah. So I wonder what those conversations at publishers look like. And, you know, when, you know, they have, obviously they would have had those conversations a couple of years ago or something when they're like, we're going to make this foam game. And you're like, really? Okay. You know, and is because those decisions are being made in Japan, are they a little less in tune with the worldwide market for shooters and those types of games, where they're just looking at it as just like, well, I don't know, Splatoon seems big, and then is that the end of the conversation? I wonder about that sort of stuff. But as a game, it's okay. You know, the basic mode, the main mode, is you foam a guy up, you shoot a dude with foam until they become a foam ball. And then anytime you pull the left trigger, you get on a surfboard. And if you're surfing on foam, your own team's foam, preferably, you move a lot faster. And so you surf into that ball, and that knocks them, and that kills them. And then they have to respawn and all that sort of stuff. If the other team surfs into them first, if their teammates surf into them, that saves them. They pop out, and then they keep fighting. And eventually there's like a protect the VIP aspect to the mode that, you know, surfaces after 8 kills or whatever it is. And it's functional. You know, like you look at it and you go like, yeah, you did it. You made the thing. Like there are aspects of the abilities and ults and stuff like that I think could be better. There's a lot of readability issues where when the foam gets stacked up, it really feels like you're just shooting it. Outlines of silhouettes of characters through a ton of foam, and that's always a little weird. It's a weird game to talk about, because like if I'm reviewing Foam Stars, which I'm not, because I would probably put in more time on it, because there's a couple of systems around you can equip some kind of gems or stones or something that'll be like, well, now you do 4% more damage. You know, it's like very minimal. But I haven't seen that system in play, so I can't really speak to it. But if I'm reviewing that game, it's like a mid, you know, it's some kind of mid 6. It's some kind of 3 out of 5. It's some kind of like, hey, you could do way worse than Foam Stars. It's okay. Foam Stars, it's, you know, hey man, just go for it. It's Foam Stars, you know? Like, it's certainly not a bad game. You might not like it, but I think, like, you know, they made that thing. It's cohesive enough. It works well enough. Like all that sort of stuff that you go like, yeah, there's something to this conceptually. It works well enough. But that's not a useful piece of information, especially. It's more like, hey, should you invest your time and money in getting good at Foam Stars, knowing that, like, because you're definitely going to have people to play against in 6 months? Like, no, man. And that's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? If I, as a voice of the people, if I was like, everyone's got to play Foam Stars, then maybe I could be the guy that helps it catch on. But, like, it's, you know, but that's not my job. It's sort of a weird one. A lot of other games, you know, the multiplayer stuff, you can kind of, there will be players around, and the difference in those, some of those conversations around, like, say, fighting games, is when you have, like, players, you know, oh, well, there will be players playing Tekken 8 for years to come. Will they be players that you, a potentially new player of Tekken 8, will want to play against? Absolutely fucking not. But you'll be able to get a game. Is that worse or is that better? I don't know. Like, the legs, the tail on multiplayer games is always such a weird one. It's why free-to-play ends up being kind of a nice idea in some cases, because it means that, you know, there's always a chance that some new player is downloading it And so potentially you are getting a wider range of skill levels. It's also why it's sometimes important in some of these major franchises, right? There's some of these games that are out there selling millions. Take a Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat is a good example of like, if we have to talk about a fighting game that has like a fan base that covers a wide range of skill levels, Mortal Kombat, I think, is that game. Because so many people like it for reasons that have nothing to do with high-level competitive play. And so as a result, you'll have people that are checking out the online or, you know, that are playing the online that are not great at it. And so the likelihood of you finding a player that you're going to have an even match with, it lasts a lot longer, that window, than it does on, say, on Tekken, for sure. If I'm going by how Tekken 7 went, and you know, Tekken 8 is still new enough that it's still kind of in that early window there. But and potentially Street Fighter, but only I would only say that with Street Fighter 6, because Street Fighter 6 seems so much better than 5, and I wonder if that's translating into a wider range of players getting it. The modern controls, if that's attracting players or not, I wonder if it is. I wonder if there are players who were just like, I wasn't going to get Street Fighter because I can't throw a fireball. And they're like, ah, yes, I'm going to. Now I can. Or if they're like, I'm still not good at the thing that you need to do, which is use your brain to outfight the other player or, you know, whatever it is. And so I think, you know, Street Fighter ends up being more approachable for kind of for different reasons than Mortal Kombat can be, I suppose. I don't know. It's a weird. It's not perfect science, right? I mean, you know, everyone's going to approach these different these coming from a you know different places and stuff like that. Whereas, like, yeah, if you're dedicated to I'm talking about the type of player, you know, like the, you know, someone in chat was like, well, you can always learn from a Tekken loss, and you can always join a community and go to a website. Fucking no. Like, yes, okay, sure, I might do that as someone who is a little deeper into this than most people. But there's plenty of people out there that are going to buy a game, they're going to play it, they're like, ah, fuck that. Like, they're, you know, are they going to go look up a website? Are they going to go try to fucking, you know, no. If the game is not self-evident, if the game is not evident to you as a player, and it doesn't always have the greatest means, though I think Tekken 8, in terms of training modes and stuff like that, it's very well done. You're probably not gonna go through and jump through those hoops. Even the tools that they put into the game itself, you're probably not gonna uncover and fully pick up on. I don't know. It's, you know, different players kind of approaching it from different angles, I suppose. It's just a matter of like how deep are you into this thing. And when I think about the most casual fighting game players, I think that a lot of them get very scared. They get scared off the servers very easily. And that's been a problem for fighting games. You know, that's the thing that establishes a sales ceiling on a lot of those games. Because they play with it for a while and it's like, oh, this is a game I can play with my friends. And, you know, if no friends come over, then I don't play the game. And, oh, this maybe is not as good of a purchase as I thought it was going to be because maybe they're not coming over as often or blah, blah, you know, like, or maybe they're coming over all the time and it's a great purchase, whatever, either way. You know, it's not necessarily something that, like, fighting games are not super inviting. And that's kind of been the exciting thing about Street Fighter VI is they tried to make those attempts in new ways. In ways that were, you know, ideally going to be balanced and fit alongside the other control schemes and so on and so forth. And so seeing that attempt and seeing them going in that direction, I felt was super exciting. And Tekken 8 does have its like kind of simple control scheme. I did finally mess with that a little bit. I don't, it's, you know, if you get into a, look, if you're in a match, if you're in a Tekken fight with someone who knows how to keep you in the air for over half your health, that is still frustrating to you as a player. And then you stand up and you're like, oops, I guessed wrong, and now I'm in the air again, and I guess that round's over. Obviously, there are things you need to learn and things you need to do well at Tekken, of course, right? I mean, I'm not, you know, this isn't necessarily like, I you know, this, I'm not reading the Riot Act to Tekken 8 here. It's a fucking hell of a game. But I think there's a lot of stuff in there that when people get onto us, when people get online and just get fucking worked in ways where they're just like, I was in the air the whole time. I felt like I couldn't even, like, was I even playing? Did I even, you know, like that feeling drives people away from fighting games, you know? I think it's better when games try to find better ways to give players the tools to do better. And Tekken 8 does do some of that, but I think at some point the core problem does end up becoming like, hey man, like, and I experienced this with Mortal Kombat 1 during their closed beta of just like, I'm getting worked and then I'm standing up. My next choice was the wrong choice and I'm getting worked again for a while, for a lot longer than it feels like I should be. And then, like, then the round's over, and I'm like, I barely, like, I basically made, like, three decisions in that entire round, and they were all wrong, and that was that. That's not a fun thing to do. If you have that persistent, if you know you can do better, if you know, you know, and or if you're very dedicated to just, like, I'm going to learn this and get better, then, you know, obviously, that is the mountain. That is fighting games, is climbing that mountain. But I do think there's always more work to be done when it comes to finding ways to make fighting games more accessible, finding ways to get more players into fighting games and getting them to understand just why it's such a special and incredible genre. Yes, and that's why I'm here to talk to you about Dive Kick. What a great video. No, Dive Kick, you know, like, but, you know, Dive Kick, but also, what, Rolling Thunder, the game that, you know, never came out, or, you know, if Riot's fighting game ever comes out, is it going to have some of those kind of concepts in it? But, like, the basic idea of, and it's why I think the modern control schemes of Street Fighter, they help show players what's really going on in a fighting game. And that's actually, I will credit Dive Kick for turning me into a different type of fighting game player because of that. Because for me, it was just like, I know how to execute. I know how to do this, and I can, you know, and I'm going to just kind of play by feel and not really think about it. And I know that there's like, I could sit here and I could stare at frame fucking data and all of this stuff all day long, but ultimately I'm just gonna get in here and do shit. And I felt like I didn't have the tools to ever get better. It was always just like, well, lost that one, I don't know, fuck. In Dive Kick, it's very plainly like, you see when you are asked out, you see it coming from like a mile away of just like, I press this button and now I'm going to lose because I left myself wide open and this person is definitely going to take advantage of that. And now I'm fucked. And so you do get to, and so like trying to apply that to, and that's, I mean, I think that mentality has helped me to a certain extent, even in something like Tekken, where like Tekken for me is kind of like the wall of just like, okay, when people get really good at Tekken, I don't have any fun playing it anymore. But I'm a little bit more persistent now with it. And so as I've been playing Tekken 8, I've been losing fights. I've been just jumping into ranked, just like just saying whatever. And win or lose, just like get in there. And there are definitely rounds where I'm just like getting fucked and spending the entire round in the air and just going like, Jesus, I've made a mistake here. But starting to see when it's coming, starting to see like, oh, this one was low, this one was high, okay, like this is, here's the mix up, here's what this guy is doing to launch me into the air. If I can just block this hit, it will give me a chance to make another choice. It will give me a chance to to potentially do something. And if I do the wrong thing, and then he, you know, like, then it's like, okay, well, now what? Okay, he can change it up with this. What do I do if this happens? What do I do if this happens? And starting to figure out, like, where those windows are for, and, you know, I'm playing as Paul still mostly, which I'm not, I don't know. Paul is fun, but I think Paul is always just, he's just kind of a dumb character. But he does have some fun shit, especially in 8. And so it becomes that thing of just like, okay, yeah, okay, now I see where this launcher fits into this string. If I can block this part of it, then I can cram my fucking fist through that window and say, fuck you. and that feels real good when you do it. Even when I still go on to lose a round or lose a set or whatever, you know, there's definitely instances. I've had Tekken 8 matches where now I feel more like I am watching what's happening and trying to react to it and trying to learn it and trying to pick it apart a little bit, as opposed to just like, if I keep doing this fist, eventually something cool is going to happen. You know what I mean? It's a great game. Tekken 8 is a fantastic game. I don't think it's necessarily for everybody, but boy, it's incredible. Sega's got to stop fucking around. The world, they've got to do it for the culture. There needs to be a new Virtua Fighter. There needs to be a new, fully supported, fantastic Virtua Fighter game. The latest Like a Dragon game, they put like VF3 in it. Like, great, thanks. The worst one in the franchise. Well, whatever. They've put all the other ones in, right? So, they need to do it. I hope they do. I hope they do. I hope they make a great new Virtua Fighter game. I would love to see that. You know, playing that PS4, you know, Virtua Fighter esports thing, or what do they call it here? Whatever they call that last release of VF5 that they put out on PlayStation 4. It's great. It's just a great game. VF4 is an amazing game. I 2 is great for what it is. It's hard to go back, but I think 4 and 5 are incredible games. I would love to see a new Dead or Alive at this point too. I think that would be a lot of fun. And a new Sonic the Fighters. I mean, you know, let's just go down the list here. Let's get Fighting Vipers 3 on the table here. Let's make it happen. Come on. Anyway, it's been a great, the last year and change for fighting games. I mean, think about it. Like, it's really been pretty amazing with how good Street Fighter VI has been. I there's been some fatigue. I haven't been playing a ton of Street Fighter VI, and so I don't know if this is necessarily like a widespread opinion, but I've seen a handful of people say that high level Street Fighter VI play is really boiling down to the Drive Rush stuff, and that everything is all just the Drive Rush over and over and over again, and that's maybe not super exciting. Like the idea that, like, as you get better and better at Street Fighter VI, that it just becomes like, well, now you have to master how Drive Rush is going to work and when to stick your foot in there, and all of that sort of shit. Which, yeah, I don't know. Like, that last, I guess it was Evo, right? That was fun to watch there, but, like, if that's the, if that is the thing that is defining high-level play, maybe that's a little less than exciting. I don't know. I do want to get back into it. I haven't had a ton of time to spend with it lately, but Street Fighter VI, still a hell of a video game. The other thing, I don't know. I don't know how we got on the topic of fighting games there for a whole long time, but there you go. Foam Stars is available now. Helldivers 2 is out, and I believe it's functional now. They had a slightly rough start as the game came out. There were just, it sounded like there was a whole lot of, you know, matchmaking and server issues and some of that stuff. So I have not played a ton of Helldivers 2. I played through a couple of levels of it and then stepped away from it and then went to go play it again, and it would not connect to a server. So I was like, okay, I'll check this out later. So I have not played with other people or, you know, any of that other stuff. Obviously that's like the thing about Helldivers 2. I really like, and I, you know, I feel like I played quite a bit of Helldivers 1, but I just, there are aspects of it that I'm not remembering right or whatever, if this is stuff that was in the first game or not, but the stratagems of Helldivers 2, which is like, it's like a little, you know, you throw out a marker for airstrikes or whatever. They have built this entire system of you tapping things out on the D-pad to pick the different things you want to call in, whether you want to call in reinforcements or you need ammo or you need an orbital strike or whatever. It's yeah, that's right. It's the Magicka. Yes. So it's all Magicka. You're right. Yes. Like, that is a whole facet of this game, and they don't, unless this is something they, like eventually add, they don't show that stuff on screen. So it's like you hold down left bumper and then tap it out and you memorize it. And it's this weird, cool system. God, Magicka. I forgot all about Magicka. And they put a little in your lobby area, they put a little machine, a little fake arcade machine in there where it says, you know, like Stratagem Hero, where it's just like you get to practice doing the D-pad things over and over again. Dan Stapleton of IGN said, was on Blue Sky saying, oh man, all those people with all those macro keyboards are fucking, you know, living large now. And I thought, like, oh man, I should do that. Just map all the strategies, because I've got, what do I have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I have 8 different programmable macro keys here. It'll show in the top left when you, okay. Because I know it'll show some of that stuff in the introductory missions and stuff like that, but okay. But yeah, you could just program all those taps into your keyboard and then just tap a button to do it, which is kind of fun. It's a cool co-op game. Sorry, there's people here doing stuff. Currently bolting trim onto a window here, while also replacing other. I mentioned it at the top of the show. There's a lot of the windows in this house either leak water or wind, and neither of those are great things for windows to do. So we're getting them replaced. This is windows get expensive. We are not replacing all of the windows in the house because I am not made of fucking money. Anyway, Helldivers 2 has the Starship Troopers vibe to it. And I love the game, like, you are from Super Earth and you are trying to spread managed democracy across the universe, and it's funny. It's a lot. I like the like, we're here for you, the like fucking democracy. Yes, like the way that they the way that they present the, like, incredibly crazy jingoistic style of, like, you know, spreading managed democracy across the system. It's like, it's crazy over the top. It's a lot of fun, but, like, you know, you're just like some badass in a cape. Like, the first of the tutorial is you earning your cape and becoming a Helldiver. And you know, you're listening to your lieutenant, sergeant, whatever, the your commanding officer who is just full on, you know, you got to get out there. You know, he's a, that's a bad imprep. What is it? You got to get out there. That's what he says. But yes, all of the constant talk about democracy and, you know, saving everyone with, it's a little much at times. I love it. I really do love that aspect of the game, but there's definitely like aspects of it where I'm just like, man, I'm tired of, The last several years have left me so tired when it comes to discussions of democracy and the aspects of just like, I can see that from here now. Ha ha, this is funny. It was funny when, you know, Starship Troopers did it. And even back then they were just like, well, you know, there's a little, you know, there's a little bit of that happening right now. Now these days it's, you know, it's maybe a little further down that, I don't know. It's a little further down that road. And you're just like, I'm so tired. I'm so tired, man. But it is fantastic. That's, that aspect of the game is really well done. And I can't wait to play more of it. I mean, that's honestly, that is my takeaway from it so far. Is last time I tried to play it is that the servers were down. They have patched the game a couple of times and kind of apologized for a lot of the early woes the game has had. They said like, hey, we got a patch coming, but we got to get some fucking sleep first. Jesus Christ. So, you know, they got some patches out. It seems like the game is running a whole lot better right now than it was a couple of days ago. And so, you know, it doesn't seem like it's an ongoing issue, but yeah, it seemed like it was sort of a problem. Some crashes both on PlayStation and on PC as well. I don't know if they fully ironed that stuff out, but it seems like it's in slightly better shape than it was. My worry about that game is that it ends up being a little mindless, but like I could go for mindless right now. Like I'm just in the game I've been looking for. I was posting about this on Co-host the other day. I want a dumbass video game. I want a late 90s, early 2000s, just generic as shit, third person shooter without a cover system. I want to stand in a hallway and then just use the right stick to look down the hallway, even though my character is standing in a situation where that character would never be able to even see down the hallway. You know what I mean? I want a fucking silenced pistol that makes the movie fucking noise when, you know, when you pull the trigger. Just like dumb spy something. Like maybe there's some stealth stuff. Maybe there's not. Maybe there's, you know, maybe there's objectives, or maybe I just got to get to the end and hit the button. I just want the, and like even something like Siphon Filter is kind of close to it, but Siphon Filter kind of has a few too many options, you know, not Alpha Protocol. I'm not looking for like a role playing game. I don't want to go to a menu and level up. I'm saying like in level 4, fucking, you got to get to the end of it and shoot all these people with your silenced pistol, or, you know, maybe you'll find a machine gun, you know, like, and I couldn't think of a good game that fit the description. I was thinking of like VIP for the PlayStation 1 based on the hit television show, but I think that's a little too much melee. Someone suggested Winback, but someone suggested Mission Impossible, which came out on the N64 and the PlayStation 1, and I think that is going to be the game I'm going to play. I think I'm going to fire up the PS1 version of fucking Mission. No, not GoldenEye. I said third person. Also, fuck GoldenEye. Like, Splinter Cell is kind of close to it, but Splinter Cell in some ways is a little too good. I just want, like, just brain dead video game. You know, and this is not the same type of game. It doesn't fit it in the same way, but the Beverly Hills Cop game for PlayStation 2. That game's too bad. That game is actually too shitty to make it work, because it's terrible. It's straight up terrible. But like I have been, I don't know, like Helldivers kind of actually scratches some portion of that itch. Helldivers is a little overly complicated for what I'm looking for in some ways. Like I am looking for something that they literally don't make anymore. Mission Impossible. Suicide Squad kind of got me thinking about it a little bit. Also, of just like, just some generic third person shooting. And I want it to kind of be garbage. Which Suicide Squad fits some parts of that bill. But it's not, you know, again, I don't want to go into menus and look at fucking numbers and go like, is this pistol better than this pistol? Is this one better than this one? The arrows are going up on this one, but I got to look at all the bonuses and the fixes and, you know, is this actually a better gun? Those systems have their place for sure, but Yeah, I don't know. Like, for someone who, you know, like I've loved Borderlands, like the looting and shooting video games of yore. I love the idea, for sure. And I have loved games in that genre, but that's something, you know, like I messed around a little bit more with Suicide Squad over the last week, and it's so not. It is so not a good one of those. Like the loot is fucking terrible. The combat, anyway, whatever. I'm not gonna go over Suicide Squad yet again, other than to say like yuck. The more time I spend with that game, the worse it seems, is what I would say about Suicide Squad. So yeah, I'm still looking for that game. Yeah, I am going to try Mission Impossible on PlayStation 1, because I think that's multiple people have said Freedom Fighters, but Freedom Fighters is too good. Freedom Fighters is an amazing game. Freedom Fighters has squad tactics. You order your guys around, you do all that stuff, and that's not, I'm not looking for a game with systems. I'm not looking for a game where they're like, we got a whole system for squad stuff and you can do this. I'm looking for, you shoot those guys and then you've got a dodge roll. Maybe. Yeah, Tomorrow Never Dies for PlayStation 1. Is that there was one really great EA Bond game that might actually fit the bill. I can't remember exactly which one it is. Army of Two. Army of Two is very dumb, but Army of Two is Army of Two is all systems. Army of Two is like aggro systems and drawing aggro from person to person and going like, I picked the gold gun because it gets aggro more easily, and then as I'm pulling aggro, my partner does the shooting and then the killing because I'm the one getting, you know, like Army of Two is, you know, and then they got those back-to-back sequences. Like Army of Two is all gimmicks and systems and all of that sort of stuff. So it's not a Max Payne 2 is maybe like a good, Dead to Rights. Maybe Dead to Rights is the game for me. I remember not liking Dead to Rights very much at all. Vanquish is too good. Vanquish is too good. Also too new. Like, I feel like I'm looking specifically for something that is going to be like, you know, the PS2 generation or older. Stranglehold might be a little too systems heavy too. There's just maybe a little too much going on. Anyway, the other game I messed with over the last 7 days is called Granblue Fantasy Relink. and it seems cool. Seems like it's doing well on Steam. They I think they announced that they had sold a million copies of it. It is a third-person character action game. I'm looking forward to, I guess it opens up in a way where you can pick different characters, but I have not gotten, I got to the first town and then had a problem where my controller stopped working and, was forced to switch to the mouse and keyboard, which at least got me into the menus where I could save it and close it. You know, the Grand Blue Fantasy Versus is a really great looking game, and it's nice to see like some of those characters and like some really great visual style brought to a game like that. This character you start with seems very straightforward. My understanding is that once you kind of get into different characters, like, you know, I've heard multiple people try to compare it to Phantasy Star Online. In terms of some of the characters in combat and a little bit of that, I'm like, yeah, okay. Yes, I see where people are getting at when they say that the dude with the gun is fun to play with for a very specific reason. But you kind of roll with a squad in that game. And so you have your, you know, you eventually build up your attacks and, pop off your supers, and you can decide if you want the AI characters to just pull their supers whenever, or if you want to save them up because it's got this big crazy moment where if you all do your supers at the same time, it chains together and you get big anime flashes and character faces on screen. And it's a very cool, moment. Actually, I think even the opening of that game, where it's just like, you know, you're on a fucking, a floating boat. You're in a boat in the air. You know, like all the cool role-playing games be doing. I was watching it. I was watching the opening cutscenes, and you see the airship rise up from beneath the clouds, and it's very beautiful. But at the same time, I'm just like, man, what a terrible idea. Why would you take a boat that looks like it should be in the water and is shaped like it belongs in the water, and instead of sails, you just put a fat blimp on top of it? Like, this thing is terrible. Why does this thing... There's no way this is the most unreasonable vehicle I have ever seen. And then throughout that introductory moment, throughout the tutorial of that game, a fucking dragon breaks loose and fucks your ship up super bad. And I'm looking at it going, see what I mean? See, this is how it fucking happens. This is what happens when you take a wooden boat in the fucking air. Dragons are going to burn that fucking thing. Stupid. What are you, dumb? And it was glorious to watch. Also, though, at the same time, if the dragon had just attacked like a slightly different way, it's wood. The boat is made of wood and it's in the air. Just burn it, man. So what I'm saying is that airship technology needs to be upgraded to be safer for the people on and board. In the introductory cutscene, handful of characters fall off the side of the airship and no one goes like, let me get the hook that we have specifically to save people when this happens. And like, I was like, oh, okay. I would have thought that they maybe would have invested ever so slightly in some kind of safety measure. But instead, it's just like, yeah, dog, they fell off the boat. We got to land the boat and see if they're okay. I don't know. And they are, but which is, you know, silly, but it's anime. Anyway, thank you for tuning into Airship Thoughts. They're stupid. Shouldn't they have parachutes instead of a tiny dragon that tries to catch them and flaps his tiny little wings and can't save them because he's a tiny little dragon? I would think that you would think about that. I would think if you were like, we're going on a grand airship adventure to the edge of the world. What's there? We're pretty sure there's monsters. Okay. All that dragon would have to do is get under the boat. If you got under it, it's done. Maybe they've got a gun that sticks out the bottom, you know, but like, There are so many different ways to fuck up a blimp attached to a boat. It's the most fucked design. Like, people are just like, the armor on this lady doesn't look like it would be very protective. Airships. I'm with you on that. But also, airships are even stupider. Safety first in the air, in the world of airships. I want to see a realistic airship simulator where they start with those things and then go like, it was cool when you invented airships by attaching a blimp to a boat because that's all we had. That's great. That's a great idea. When you said, what if we put a blimp on this boat and it could fly? I think that's a great idea. That's really cool. We can do better. We should probably figure out ways to do better because these fuckers, they burn up real good. They don't stay in the air real good. So we should figure out a way to, you know, probably make them a little more aerodynamic. I don't know. They feel like they could cut through the air a little bit better than this and be maybe a little bit more nimble than a boat that we have attached a blimp to. Maybe. It's crazy. Anyway, Grand Blue Fantasy Relink. It's a very nice looking game. Like I said, I had trouble with it on the PC where it locked out my controller completely, and that was incredibly annoying. So I have to go back to it and spend a little more time with it. But that's it for video games. They're over. Let's talk about the news. Attach a blimp to a house or something. While you're at it, why not? A house blimp. Xbox is changing. How? We think we know. We don't quite know. We don't have the official word just yet. We will as of Thursday. Last week, Microsoft announced that they heard you. And that they are going to have some announcements about the updates of a business update about the future of the Xbox business. That is going to happen Thursday on a podcast. I guess they do have a regular podcast. They are going to have Phil Spencer and Sarah Bond and Matt Booty on a podcast to talk about the future of Xbox. This is, of course, in the wake of all of these reports about multiple Xbox games appearing on other platforms, such as the PlayStation and the Switch. We think we know that Hi-Fi Rush is coming because there's data in the latest patch of that game that has t-shirts that seem like they are built to be used in a PlayStation and Switch version of that game. And then there's been a handful of rumors about other games ranging as wide as, you know, something like Sea of Thieves, Gears of War, Starfield, like, you know, a number of games have kind of come up along the way here. This then, as these stories started hitting, it led to, you know, maximum meltdown in the Xbox fanboy community, which is, you know, whatever. But it led to enough, like, there's been enough questions and enough, like, happening around the edges of that where you're just like, I don't, like, what the hell's going on over there? And so they said last week, we're going to have something next week. And then now this week, Monday, yesterday, they announced, hey, we're going to have a podcast where we're going to get in there and talk about what the heck's going on. Separately from that, Shannon Liao has confirmed, or is reporting rather, that there was a meeting, an internal meeting last Tuesday, where Phil Spencer told employees, this is just quoting directly from her Substack, called Updater. The company held an internal Tuesday town hall where Spencer told employees that there were no plans to stop making consoles and that Xboxes would continue to be part of a strategy that involves multiple kinds of devices. Xbox did not immediately return a request for comment. And Yeah, of course. I mean, but you know, so that has kind of been the only, I think, new information, or kind of the only thing that seems like a proper update on some of this stuff is this internal meeting, because, you know, that, like, as the word was spreading of this, I think there was a little bit of hand wringing from people internally that didn't know what was going on, that saw that there was going to be an announcement next week, and they're like, we don't even know what the hell is in the announcement next week. Are we even, you know, are we even staying in this business? Which I think is a little bit like I talked about last week. I think there's a lot of like sky is falling type of stuff around this that just doesn't make a ton of sense. It would be ridiculous at this point for Microsoft to get out of the video game business, or to get out of the hardware business, even. Could the types of hardware that they create change down the line? Sure. We talked about this for like an hour last week. I recommend if you really want to deep dive into this stuff, go listen to last week's show, where I kind of went blow by blow through a lot of it and talked about like what are some things that Microsoft could be doing. But like the odds of them getting out of Xbox hardware have to be insanely low, because so much of their games business is built on Game Pass being a thing. And even if Game Pass is not growing at the rate that they hoped it would, and even if that growth has stalled out a little bit, it is too much money for them to walk away from. So the very idea that, you know, and this is, you know, people going like, I'm getting rid of my Xbox, and like all this dramatics online. And this extended to some really fucked up shit. Like, I started seeing a lot of like, and it just made me realize how terrible social media is right now for the spread of news. It's think about how bad the situation was when the always online Xbox One stuff was getting around, right? Which is something they did kind of announce and then walked back, but they announced it in a way that even they didn't seem sure what the situation was, because it was still coming together, whatever it was, but it was like always online. And you're like, okay, well, what if someone's in a log cabin for a week, or what if someone's here for a, what's the situation there? Are they like, oh, we'll have a solution for that. We'll have a solution. Will we have a solution? Like, there was so much confusion around that. But even when they walked it back and said, hey, we're just making a regular ass console, sorry, fuck, dude, that word never spread. And so I had situations back then, or even just like a year later, where I was getting into cabs and like, what do you do? Like, I do video games. Like, oh, I didn't get an Xbox because you always got to be on the internet. I'm like, wow, okay. Like, it's a full year later, and this guy literally said he didn't buy an Xbox because of this, which is not actually true. So whatever. That was bad then. That impacted them for sure. I have seen so many, like, whether it's like TikTok videos or just like various things on different social media that are the most sensationalistic and almost certainly untrue headlines being used to promote these videos, to pull people in, and it's people going like, breaking news, Xbox is getting out of the hardware business. And then like it's a 3-minute video on TikTok of some guy going like, and they're doing this and they're doing that and they're gonna get rid of this, and reports are saying that and I'm just like going, okay, all right, take a deep breath. It's crazy the number of people that are reporting things like that as fact. When it is, I think that is basically impossible at this point. I will allow some small percentage chance of just like, hey, maybe things are really crazy and they are gonna, but I think when we look at the way they're announcing this stuff and the some of the things that they're, you know, kind of some of the hands being tipped right now about how this announcement is rolling out, just isn't, you know, that seems even less likely than it did 3 days ago, that they would get out of the hardware business. It's just stupid. You know, could there be some scenario where 5 years down the line they get out of the hardware business? Sure. Absolutely. Could they be slowly winding down? Anything is possible. But are they going to, like, turn on a podcast on Thursday and be like, that was a good run, guys. You'll have access to Game Pass for as long as you got it. And then, I don't know. No. And it's really crazy to me to see how, you know, because that's my world, right? This is the thing that I do pay a lot of attention to. Obviously, misinformation on the internet has been an increasing problem for years now in ways that are far worse and more dramatic and more damaging to the real world than, you know, Xbox consoles, sure. But seeing this happen that way, where you just see these people just straight up spouting absolute bullshit, just full on, like, that's not even close to, like, even if you think that that's the thing they're going to announce, it is being presented as that, like, this is a done deal, this is fact, they're done, they're getting out of hardware, that's it, no more Xbox, hey guys, there's no more Xbox, that's the sort of shit that they're putting out there. And that's wild. It's wild to see that sort of stuff. What are they going to announce? That's the question we've kind of moved on to. At this point, we do have the internal. Well, okay. As a further aside here, someone in chat just said gaming journalism is in a super sad state. These are just dudes. This is not like an outlet. It's not like IGN making these videos. It's not, you know, Games Radar making these videos. It's like some guy going like, I'm here with the latest gaming news. It's like super irresponsible reporting. I hesitate to even call it reporting. It's more like at some point it crosses over and seems more like a grift. And it's a bummer, but anyway, what are they gonna say on Thursday? I like, the situation seems kind of grim in a way, but I don't think that what they're gonna announce is gonna matter. I think that people are gonna come out of this, I suspect people will come out of this podcast with, like, even more conspiracy theories, because I don't think that what they're going to say will address 100% of the shit that's been flying around. Because I don't think that it's worth addressing all of the shit that's been flying around. And also, I don't think they'd be ready to really speak fully about some of that stuff. So it's The things have gone so weird and big and with stakes, like, oh, they're getting out of hardware and all of this sort of stuff, that even if they get in front of people and say, we're not getting out of hardware, you will still have some people that'll be like, well, that's what they're saying today, you know. And then you will have some people that go, they backpedaled because we were angry. Yeah. Like, no, this is... They're moving forward with plans that they've, you know, probably been looking at for quite some time now. So I look at it as, why would they do a podcast? Why would they, you know, they're branding this as like, hey, it's a special episode of our existing podcast with the leadership team on it, and they're going to talk to you about the future of Xbox. It's not, here's the Xbox business update and it's a 45-minute stream and we're going to cover this, you know, like when they normally do their developer directs or whatever the sorts of things that when they have, like, big announcements or whatever, the sorts of formats that they tend to use, this isn't one of those. And so to me, that says a couple of things. One, they needed something they could get done fast. And two, they don't necessarily have a ton to show. That's my guess, because if they had a lot to show, you know, a podcast to me says, and it is going to be on YouTube, it is a video for, as well. So, but it is, you know, an audio podcast. Also, If they had a bunch of footage of, like, here's Hi-Fi Rush running on a Switch, here's Sea of Thieves, here's Gears of War running on a PlayStation, you know, like, if this was, like, some big rollout, and it's like, here's our big near new future, like, this would have the look and feel of a press conference. This would have a press briefing, you know, they would give it a different label. And so, to me, this says that they were like, okay, we have to address this stuff. Like, it was just going to be a quick kind of announcement with maybe, like, a little bit of context around the new strategy, but now, because of the way this is blown up, because of the way it leaked, because of all the shit that's out there now, they do have to find a way to address it. A podcast gives them a lower production value way to address it, right? Because it's like, let's just sit down on our set, wherever we do this, you know, like, I will admit to not having seen the Xbox podcasts lately. And so I don't know what their exact format is these days. But at the end of the day, yeah, it's like, it's a couch set or something. They sit down, they talk, they're done. And that to me says, yeah, that they wanted a quick way to address it, which I think they have waited a really long time. I think the idea of them saying we'll have something next week, and then that being Thursday, with how weird, like, I think that a lot of this has become very dire. A lot of the, like, it's just the, again, it's vibe type stuff, which is hard to report on. But it's just, it makes it seem very negative right now. But yes, for a company the size of Microsoft, that is probably a very fast turnaround for them. Of just like, okay, what do we got? What's the information we have to get out there? So they have to spend time going like, okay, what are we revealing? What are we going to say about this? We know what the plan is, but we don't have, a ton of footage. You know, this isn't like a full on rollout of these games on multiple platforms. This isn't some big press conference worthy thing, but we do have to discuss it. We do have to contextualize the leaks that have happened and give people kind of the mindset as to why we're doing this and you know, why we're doing it now and whatever else. So I look at it as like, they will address it in as minimal a way as they can. It's not something that's probably going to have a ton of footage to support it. And I think they will attempt to present it as a frank conversation with the leadership of Xbox. Now, frank conversation, presenting it that way versus it actually being that way. And, you know, like, this is a message they have to get right. This is something that they will have spent a lot of time, especially by giving themselves a week or so to work on this. They will have spent as much time as they possibly can to make sure that they are getting the messaging right. And maybe they'll still screw it up. I don't know. But I think it will end up being something as simple as just like, yeah, yes. Like I said last week, I think that there is sort of there is the ongoing conversation around getting more people to play games. And that was a strategy that they used around xCloud and the Xbox streaming service and doing all of that different stuff to say like, hey, we're doing, we want a billion people playing our games. You know, it's the same conversation. We want a billion machines running Windows. We want, you know, like the big Microsoft, like we want as many people as possible to be able to play our games. Everybody wins when everybody can play. That's not you know what I mean? And so I suspect that when they do get up there in front of people, they will spin this as being part of that ongoing strategy of just like, as we've been doing this, we've come to realize that we don't really like exclusives. We think that they are harmful for the industry, and they need to go light on that because they will eventually go back on it. Some situation will eventually come along and be like, all right, well, exclusive. But it'll be that sort of ongoing conversation, trying to tap into things that they have said along the way around wanting to get more people to play games. And they will say, like, as a result of that, we've decided to bring a limited number of our games and franchises to other platforms. And I believe that my belief is that they will stick to mostly, like, let's call it low stakes reveals, right? like Hi-Fi Rush. I think it's tremendous that that game come to more platforms. More people should play it. I think that Pentiment is the other game that kind of surfaced over the weekend as like as someone suddenly going like, well, Pentiment's definitely coming to Switch. Like, okay. It should. More people should have the opportunity to play Pentiment. It did not resonate super hard with me, but it is a super high quality thing that people loved. And then maybe you throw in, I would throw in Starfield. Like I would say if you got to pick one bigger game, personally, I would throw in Starfield, but that is very reflective of my feelings on Starfield. And so if their feelings are a little different on that, then maybe that would be one that they would not reveal. But I wouldn't necessarily come out and say like what we think of as the classic Xbox first party franchises, like a Gears. I might be like, we'll hold off the Gears of War announcement for another few months here or something like that. Maybe Sea of Thieves subs in for Pentiment or something like that. And that ends up being, you know, like, but if they got up there and they said, hey, we're going to, on a case by case basis, evaluate our library and see what makes sense to bring to other platforms. Today we can say, hey, it's going to be Hi-Fi Rush and Sea of Thieves. I think that's like a good starting point that confirms the news, confirms some of the rumors without going whole hog on it. Because I don't think, even if their long-term plan, even if they're looking at numbers and saying like, hey, long-term, we intend to bring just about everything to other platforms, I don't think they necessarily have to get into that right now. I think if they just get out there and say, this is on a case-by-case basis, we are looking at these sorts of games. And of course, we're evaluating, you know, there's been a lot of games going around and we're evaluating all of those. We have nothing to announce at this time. But if you're asking me, do I think Starfield is definitely going to make it over to other platforms eventually? I 100% believe that that will be the case at this point. And I think that the games that, because I just, you know, I think from a visibility perspective, I think, you know, that game still feels like a Bethesda game. And while they are owned by Microsoft, all the other stuff, it doesn't fit into the kind of core Xbox franchise model the way that some of the older, you know, like it would be weirder for me if they said Forza was coming to PlayStation 5. You know what I mean? Whereas I think Starfield coming to PlayStation 5 makes a ton of sense. They should do that. They should. And not do it day and date. Which obviously they're not. But I think Starfield would make a ton of sense. Probably because some of that work has already been done. And it makes sense for them to want to get as many sales of that game out as they possibly can. You know? So I think that doing it as a podcast ends up setting the stakes a little bit lower. It ends up lowering the production requirements on their end to make it something they can put together a little bit more quickly, because a podcast can be pictures of people's faces. It doesn't have to be slick edited with footage of games and, you know, the way the expectations of a press conference are. I think if they got up there and said, here's our business update, it's going to be this many minutes. And then the scene opened and it was like three people sitting on a couch, I think that would have four people. There will probably be a host, I would assume. I think that would look weird, but I think by getting out in front of it and saying it's going to be a special episode of our podcast, it helps kind of almost downplay it a little bit. And I think that kind of probably helps them set some expectations on what this reveal, what this news ends up being. And then I don't know, there were, you know, a bunch of weird talk about what's the next Xbox going to look like. Are they going to make a handheld device? And, you know, there's people that have been out there on the record saying that they think that there will absolutely be a handheld Xbox at some point. And you know, what does that mean? There's been other people kind of coming to some of the same conclusions that I have along the lines of, you know, what if the Xbox was more open, like a proper PC, as opposed to a closed off console? And then some additional talk saying that the Surface team was perhaps going to be developing the next Xbox, which I don't know. The bit from the internal meeting, let me pull that up again and just reread it here. From updated, Xboxes would continue to be part of a strategy that involves multiple kinds of devices, is the phrase. And that's not a direct quote from the meeting, but that's the phrase that is used here. And I do think that, you know, they've said as much around, like, hey, we want to help Windows, you know, we want to help build Windows into something that will run better on these handheld devices like the ROG Ally and the Lenovo Legion Go. And so that's already work that they were on the record as saying they would like to do. And so I think doing that work makes a ton of sense. And then I think once you do that work, you pull it into a console at some point too, because why not? Why not just make that your console if you get it good enough? That seems very straightforward. And then, you know, and then eventually you do a streaming focused device, which there's been plenty of rumors that, you know, we know that they've prototyped streaming focused devices, specifically for use with, Xbox game streaming. I still call it xCloud. I can't remember what the actual name for it is. Xbox Game Pass streaming. Anyway. I suspect that though that ends up being the end. So I think people going into this expecting like all will be revealed and then it's going to be like a 3-minute trailer of Gears of War 2 running on a PlayStation 5 or something like that. Like I don't think it's going to be that. Xbox Cloud Gaming is the official name of that now. Okay. That, yes, that makes sense. GameSpot had a report pegging the sales ratio of PlayStation 5s to Xboxes at 2-1, which I feel like some of the reporting from before that had been closer to 3-1, which is interesting, but it still is not a great ratio. Not a great ratio. And so we'll see. I don't know. Like I said, I think that there's a real negative cloud around this stuff right now. And I don't think that... I had a quick... I won't get into the specifics of this because it's just like it's a quick email from, you know... I emailed someone over there to say, hey, if there's going to be any interview, I would like to, you know, get in on that. And the reply I got, you know, I don't necessarily get the impression that internally this is something that is being viewed as some huge negative. But I don't really know what the, I don't know. Anyway, I guess that's, it's, I don't think that this is going to be them running away from consoles, obviously. You know, we have the internal report of the meeting saying that they are going to stay in the hardware business. I think there are more opportunities than ever to offer different types of hardware. I mean, I'm even back on board. Like, the Steam Deck has made me a believer in that form factor for PC and console games. You know, at least as long as it's on an open machine. The thing I don't necessarily want is a closed, you know, walled garden kind of system. Like, if it was... Here's our handheld Xbox and it only plays Xbox games and you can't really, you know, do much else with it. But a device I can tinker with and fuck around with, that's exciting. So like when, you know, the Switch 2 is exciting because it's Nintendo's software output getting a visual bump, getting access to more power. That's interesting to me, but it's still this closed off system that you're going to use to play first party Nintendo games, and maybe you'll play third party games for the first year or so, and then they will continue to have, you know, they will eventually be back in the weird hole they're always in with third parties and stuff like this. Galactic Cat in the chat says Xbox made $16.28 billion in 2021 and $15.56 billion in 2022. Why would they ever stop this? It seems very strange to kill off a multi-billion dollar enterprise because it doesn't make as much as Sony. Yes, that's exactly my point. They're not killing it off. Why would they kill it off? Why would they stop making Xboxes? They won't. They will continue to make Xboxes. They're going to. They are looking for ways to make more money, and also making $16 billion or $15 billion might not be in line with what the company wants them to be making, and it might not be profit. I don't know. Is that overall revenue or is that just straight up profit? I don't think that's profit. I'd have to go look. And so, again, we have to consider Microsoft's long legacy in various types of businesses where they want to be the leader in a category, and they want to see a pathway to be a leader in a category. And if they don't see a pathway to be a leader in a category, then they need to decide if that's a category they want to be in or what other changes they can make. And so these are changes that they're going to make. And I don't think the changes they're going to make, like long term, like no one's going to care. The impact this will have on people buying Xboxes is not outweighed by the impact people already are having by not buying Xboxes. So at the end of the day, I look at it as what we're a third of the way to halfway through this generation of hardware, depending on how you count and if someone tries to, you know, do something funky. The die has been cast. As Phil Spencer said, you know, he's not going to out-console Sony or Nintendo, especially at this point in the game. Back when Redfall was released, I believe, is when he said something along those lines. Like, this is not a situation where, like, if they just had three more games out and they were really good, they would outsell the PlayStation. Like, no, people have made their choice. Third-party game sales are going to happen on the PlayStation for the rest of this generation. And maybe next time around things go differently. You know how this business works. Fucking people flip on a fucking dime when things go weird. So, hey, anything is possible next time around. We don't really know what the go-forward plan for Xbox hardware is. But at the end of the day, if you're looking at what are you going to do right now, you're going to look at your strategy and go, okay, well, the Game Pass strategy got us this far. It does not get us where we need to be, though. And so what else are we going to do to further our goal of stacking chips, of getting that cream? We need this cheddar. We have all this Fetty, Holmes, but we need more. And so they're going to make some changes. And I think that makes a ton of sense with where they're at right now. And I think that from a mainstream player perspective, from the people who are not plugged into this, like, remember, there are millions of people who own Xboxes or PlayStations that don't know jack fuck about any of this and won't. And they'll see Sea of Thieves come out on a PlayStation and they'll be like, okay. And then they'll buy it. A game that they maybe have never even heard of, like Hi-Fi Rush, will come to their platform and maybe they'll buy it. This isn't something that's, you know, I if Xbox comes back with a compelling hardware story next time around, I think that they will have a shot at selling consoles, just like everyone always does at the start of a generation. I don't think that this is something that does lasting damage to Xbox's chances in the market. People are like, this is going to kill the Xbox. This is going to, you know, they've already been bringing their games to PC. You already don't have to buy an Xbox. And I'll tell you, as someone who's been playing most of their first party output on PC, it's fucking awesome. It's fan-fucking-tastic to be able to play these games with at a higher resolution, at a higher frame, you know, like all of the stuff. It's great. They should make consoles for people that want those, for sure. But it's been real nice to not play Xbox games on an Xbox. And so it's hard to get too worked up about it. Because you have people that are just like coming up with all of these insane scenarios where they're just like, hey, no, what you don't understand. What people are really worried about is if Xbox gets out of the hardware business, then their back catalogs and digital libraries will all be gone. And like, that's not an argument that people are, that's not a thing that's likely to happen at any point in the very near future. And if that is something that does happen, that will happen even if Microsoft is still making Xboxes. Remember that backwards compatibility is something that happens because they can do it. If suddenly, like, you know, there was some big technological innovation that led to the rise of a new architecture, and that architecture happened to be perfect for making video game consoles, everyone would migrate to that. And if that made machines harder to, you know, if it made backwards compatibility harder to achieve, they would still go like, yeah, cool, man, whatever. Or they would try to do what they could do around the edges of just like, well, we moved over to ARM, but we're still going to try to develop. We got this shim in place. We're going to try to make it so some year. It would be like the 360 situation all over again, where only a handful of games. It's a big handful, but it's not the full library. But only some games will run. They would do that again in a heartbeat if it made sense to change architectures. The backwards compatibility stuff is great, and I love it. But at the same time, it's not a primary feature of any of these devices. It's a thing they do because they can. And it's a thing that helps make that transition nice. And so in that 1 year period, 2 year period of both platforms being kind of around, you know, I think about that slow transition of PS4 to PS5, you know, like some of that, it makes sense right in there. And then once you get out of that window and new games are rolling out on a regular basis, it doesn't get talked about. It doesn't get thought about quite as much. So they would throw that shit out in a minute if it made sense for their business model. So what I'm saying is, I think it's entirely possible that backwards compatibility goes away someday, even if there are still new Xboxes coming out. And so it becomes a situation where, like, you know, you can still hook up an Xbox 360 and still get your downloaded games. Like, that stuff still works. They're shutting off the ability to buy that stuff, right? Or at least buy it on the console. And we talked about some of the reasons why that might be on a previous episode, so I won't rehash the whole thing again. But yeah, I don't think that argument really holds water about, like, if they get out, then all your games will be gone. It's like, that's just more doomsday, sky is falling type stuff out of people that are trying to connect dots that are not there. And would they get out of get out of the hardware business? Maybe. You know, if the PC made sense for them, is it better? I don't think Microsoft gets out of the gaming business because, they've been in the gaming business longer than there's been an Xbox. But I don't think that the arguments that people are coming up with around this stuff as to why it's such a horrible thing, I don't think that that's something that is rooted in reality. I could always be wrong. You know, maybe they turn on a podcast on Thursday and they'd be like, let me tell you about the personal computer. Let's talk about Windows 12. It's going to run some Xbox. I mean, you know, you could play Killer Instinct on it right now. Hey, that's another one. Killer Instinct, by the way, just hit its 10-year anniversary. And they rolled out an update, and now they have run a cross-play test between the Steam version and the Xbox version, which includes the Xbox Store version on PC. And so they have been doing work on Killer Instinct to add cross-play to it. Do you think further tests on crossplay and some of that sort of stuff? Maybe. What if they What if they put Killer Instinct out on PlayStation 5? That'd be a weird one, but also considering the way fighting game tournaments work and all of that sort of stuff, it would be pretty cool. I bet that people who run fighting game tournaments that also care about Killer Instinct, which is maybe not the largest number in the world, the PlayStation platform is where the fighting games live. It's where the fight sticks live. It's where all of that stuff lives. If they were to just say, like, hey, man, we're putting KI on PlayStation, I think that would be a really great idea. I just, when I saw that they announced their, like, cross-play beta thing, with this, that got me thinking. Like, I wonder if they would do that. They should do that. That's a 10-year-old game, and it's relevant in some way. It could be relevant to a new audience, I think, if they, you know, because people that play fighting games tend to not do it on Xbox. Anyway. The Verge has a big, long story about this as well that is not really... It's more of a recap on kind of how we got to this point, where they're talking about Game Pass, and they're rolling up some of the comments from the various court cases that Microsoft has found itself in around the acquisition of Activision, which puts them, you know, it's a point in the Verge article that is worth making here. Microsoft's overall gaming business just passed Windows in terms of revenue, thanks to the Activision Blizzard acquisition. So for Microsoft, games makes more money than Windows does, which that seems like a big deal, but you have to maintain that, and you have to go where the players are. You have to, you know, there's a lot of things you need to do to shepherd that and continue to grow it. They're not in this business to sit on their hands and go, yeah, man, cool. Because that's going to just get them back into the Xbox One situation. So, in May of 2022, Microsoft had an ambitious goal of 100 million Game Pass subscribers by 2030. At the time, the service was sitting at 25 million, which was up from 18 million in 2021. But yes, it has stalled out, and the reason given, or the reasons they come to in the Verge article here, which is by Tom Warren, is that a lot of games got delayed. That the big tent poles, like your Starfields and even Redfall, which before it came out, maybe was seen in a slightly better light than it was after it came out. You know, some of those games getting delayed, and some of those games coming out in states where they're just like, okay, this is not an amazing, this is not a great game. They haven't given, apparently, a lot of updates on the subscriber number. Analysts estimate, according to The Verge here, that they're at about 33 million subscribers. Which would say that, okay, yeah. So, again, this Verge article is a really good recap of all of this shit with the numbers in there as well. If accurate, that's around 33% growth in 2 years. Microsoft targeted a 73% growth rate for Game Pass subscriptions for a single fiscal year that ended in June 2022, but only managed 28%. The company then dropped Xbox Game Pass growth as a target for Nadella's executive compensation last year after first exceeding its ambitious Game Pass internal targets in 2020 and then failing to meet targets for 2 years in a row. So, you know, I think that kind of does say that growth probably has continued to stall a little bit. They get into a little bit of the changes that Apple is making in the EU and how the way they're making those changes is not exactly conducive to, you know, moving things forward for Microsoft in a fantastic way. Hard to say before Thursday where they'll actually end up. But again, I do I do think that if you're expecting this thing to feel like blockbuster crazy, like just wild announcements of we're putting Game Pass on PlayStation, we're doing this and that, like I just don't think that this is gonna be, even if they have like bigger things in motion and other plans in place, this feels like something where they like kind of got caught slightly off guard by all of the leaks, and that they're going to kind of just try to right the ship with as little information as they can, and give the update of like, hey, here's what we're doing. Here's the, you know, here's the general framework of the strategy that we're moving on. Rooted in some of the language they've talked about as far as like, we want more places to play. We want Xbox to be the best place to play, but we want as many people as possible to play our games. Blah, you know, like that sort of thing will probably be a part of this, I would assume. And they'll tie it into some of the messaging that they've been using for the last handful of years. But again, I don't think that this is going to be some gigantic behind the scene, you know, like the context of it might feel like a big deal, but I don't think that this is going to end up actually being a big deal, because again, Microsoft already publishes games on multiple platforms. Minecraft already comes to other platforms. Call of Duty, which they now own, is going to stay a multi-platform game. And those are some of the biggest games that they own, if not the biggest games that they own. And so if the biggest games they own are big enough and good enough to end up on PlayStation and Switch and all these other platforms, why wouldn't you put Pentiment on them? Why wouldn't you put even Halo and Forza? Why wouldn't you at some point? And maybe it's not a launch strategy. Maybe it's not a like, hey, day one, you're going to get all of these games across the board. And it's, you know, like maybe it ends up looking a lot like Sony's PC strategy. Where it's like, hey, you know, some number of months after the fact, we will bring our games to PlayStation. We would love it for you to come over here and sign up for Game Pass. But like once the people who have made that move have already made that move, and I bet most of them already have, it doesn't actually hurt anybody to just release those games on PlayStation. So fuck it. Do it. And that's what I think they'll do. Microsoft's also facing some heat, some continued heat from the United States government over some layoffs. They have laid off 1,900 people, which the FTC has gone out there and said, wait. When you said you were buying Activision, you did not make it sound like you were going to lay off that many people. What the fuck is going on over there? Microsoft's response to that has been basically like, hey, the deal changed a lot because of people like you making and the market authority in the UK. We didn't acquire the streaming rights to Call of Duty. We only, you know, and so, you know, as a result, the deal has changed massively, and you are still holding us to this old version of the deal that never came to pass. We'll see where that goes. I don't know. The upshot of that is the San Francisco Chronicle, the newspaper there in San Francisco, reported that the office for Toys for Bob is going to be closing down as a part of these layoffs. Eurogamer is reporting that 86 Toys for Bob employees were lost as a result of those layoffs. Toys for Bob was a weird thing for Activision. It was up in Marin County, so it was actually close to the Sausalito office I worked at in 2008. And I commuted past it most days. Toys for Bob was the Skylanders studio, founded by the creators of Star Control. And since then, those founders are now out on their own. I believe that they are working on a new Star Control that will exist. Like, it will not have the name. There's the Urquan Masters has been available as kind of a free source port kind of thing for a while. It's going to end up on Steam in a couple of days here, I believe, under the name Free Stars, the Urquan Masters. And then they have another star control thing. Yeah. Free Stars, the Urquan Masters is, it's just listed as coming soon. Okay. February 19th is when that will launch on Steam. So if you want to play Star Control, it's free. It will be free. It's going to stay free. It's free right now. You can go download it wherever, but it's going to come to Steam. Star Control is a fucking cool as fuck game. Both of those games were cool. And then Stardock ended up with the rights and put out a bunch of fucking bullshit. Whatever. So yes, Toys for Bob. I just, I don't know, as a person who spent a lot of time for a couple of years there thinking about Skylanders. I'm sad about the loss of Toys for Bob. They had like any other Activision studio, I think they had found themselves kind of helping out on Call of Duty, but also some of the other stuff, the Crash Bandicoot stuff that I think was coming out more recently. I think some of that came out of Toys for Bob as well. And Spyro, yeah, some of that stuff. So yeah, they did some of the other work at Activision while also somehow being a Call of Duty assist team as well. And so I remember someone from Activision PR came through and stopped by our office just to visit and say hi. And I was like, well, what are you doing up here? And like, oh, you know, Toys for, you know, we got a studio up here. They're working on something. I think they're working on something. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then came to find out like a year later or whatever it was that was Skylanders. And, God, that whole Toys to Life thing. What a weird time. There's a book there. Enough weird shit happened around the competitive landscape of the three major Toys to Life games. We'll, you know, maybe include the Ubisoft game as a fourth, I guess, but Starlink is kind of a one and done sort of deal. But between the Lego game, the Disney Infinity, and Skylanders, there's weird shit happened around that whole thing. Yeah, maybe Amiibos count. I don't know. Maybe you count Amiibos in that. Speaking of Disney Infinity, maybe it will live on someday inside of Fortnite. Huh? Disney has acquired a chunk of Epic Games, a chunk worth $1.5 billion. That's what Disney has thrown into Epic. As a result of that, what they're going to get out of it is what Eurogamer is billing as a multi-year partnership to create an expansive and open games and entertainment universe connected to Fortnite. This persistent universe will interoperate with Fortnite to offer a multitude of opportunities for consumers to play, watch, shop, and engage with content, characters, and stories from across Disney's vast IP portfolio. Sure. Yeah. Why wouldn't you? They show like a Disney cruise and ESPN and, you know, the full catalog of weird, like Disney owns a lot of stuff. Disney has had weird goals around metaverse stuff for a while. They had a division working on it. I got invited to a Disney event that I ended up not going to, but I think it was at the park. And it was like, we've partnered with a number of Web3 companies in order to experiment and figure out a lot, you know, some blockchain, this and that. And we have a number of companies that are ready to show off what they've been working on. And so would you like to come to this event and see a bunch of... I'm good. I don't think that stuff stuck around. I don't know that any of that stuff stuck around. I don't know that any of that actually made the cut. Maybe some of it did. But yeah, I think in the context of like Disney's place as largely licensing their concepts and properties out to other studios like they're doing with Indiana Jones right now, you know, publishing some stuff here and there, but, you know, but really, you know, mostly acting as like a, you know, hey, we've got this portfolio. Do you want to come make a thing with this? Let's talk. I think that makes a ton of sense. And I think that the Disney thing, like, they've obviously already partnered with Epic for work on some Star Wars stuff. And putting some Star Wars stuff inside of Fortnite. I think that the Unreal Engine's value to filmmakers and all of that sort of stuff is only on the rise. And so that stuff probably matters a little bit when we think about Disney, you know, basically investing in the whole company like that. I assume that's something that they're at least like keeping in the back of their mind, but it's not really the focus of the announcement. The announcement really is about, hey, we're going to make this Disney universe thing inside of Fortnite, or, you know, inside the Fortnite tools that will live separate from Fortnite so that they can control more directly what happens with it, as opposed to just like, yeah, we would love to sell a Mickey Mouse skin, but not if you're going to give him a shotgun and not if you're going to turn him into a Lego guy. So I think that makes a ton of sense in some sick way. It's a huge deal, right? But this is also probably the best case scenario for what they could be doing in this space with that content. It's the old thing of like, you know, well, it's old now, I guess, but people have been saying for a long time, like, oh, what's going to happen with the metaverse? What's going to, there's all these metaverses. Is anyone ever going to do it? Is anyone ever going to pull it together and come up with something? And it's like, motherfucker, Fortnite's been right there for years doing it. You know, Roblox to another extent has been in that thing for a long time. But like the multi IP crazy fucking thing, like Fortnite has been quietly growing into that for a good long time. And so instead of going out and building your own dumb thing and being like, check it out, man, we made a virtual third person mall where you can buy Disney shit or whatever, you know, whatever the, you know, whatever you would make and try to call like, this is our metaverse strategy. If you put on the VR headset, you can see what Mickey Mouse would look like if he was in your house. And then you can click here to subscribe to ESPN. You know, like all that shit's fucking stupid. Like, all of the metaverse plans, I feel like I've heard over the years for just, like, how can we get people to spend money in type of some kind of virtual space? One, they've all been about VR, which is never what the hell this stuff should be about. Because you're just limiting its availability to way too small of a number. Instead, work with the tools you got. Work with the thing that people are already using. Work with the thing that already remembers something that resembles a proper metaverse. If we're talking about commercial metaverses, Fortnite's right there. They already did it. Just build on that. It's probably the smartest move they could have made. You know, is that something I'm gonna, you know, I don't necessarily see myself going like, I've got to get in here and look at the virtual Disney Plus experience and see, like, I don't fucking care. If there's a cool Frozen-themed world or Little Mermaid-themed world, maybe I would show that to my daughter. I don't know. And they did one of the games, what is it called? Dreamlight Valley, I believe, has some Frozen stuff in it now, but I've been afraid to show that to my daughter. Maybe I should be even more afraid to show her a fucking Disney metaverse, honestly. But anyway, my only request for that is that they should build the entirety of Disney Infinity inside of Fortnite. Right down to the figures. Right down to the, like, let me do all of that stuff. There was some really neat stuff in Disney Infinity. It's a shame. I think most of that's, you know, you could probably go buy the discs and still have that experience to some extent. I think there's a version on Steam. They did some weird pivot version of Infinity on Steam that was meant to, like, like, how here's a version you can play without owning any of the figures or whatever. Is that still there? Yeah, Disney Infinity Gold Edition. With all of the 1.0, 2.0, and 3.0 content, I suppose, is what that is, what this actually is. Yeah, those games, they were neat. Like, I'm still not a Disney guy. It, like, there's something about the way my kids have been drawn into that stuff that I find low-key terrifying, but here we are. There's no escape. But Infinity was neat. Infinity did some really cool shit. Anyway, I don't know that they have a launch date for this. And I wonder how much of this will operate, like how much of, like, if you are purchasing Disney content for use in the Disney area, how much of that will be able to be piped out into the racing game or to proper Fortnite or something like that. Like, I don't think they'll allow a situation where, like, here's Jack Sparrow holding a fucking AK-47 or whatever. But I don't know. Did they do some of that? There's some Disney characters. I guess there's some properties where that would maybe make a little more sense than others, right? Yeah, maybe Jack Sparrow is literally in Fortnite. I don't know. Ask me anything about Fortnite. You shoot dudes. The shooting doesn't feel good. There's my answer. I think you can play as Solid Snake. But yeah, anyway, Mickey Mouse is perhaps a better example of, like, they probably would not have Mickey Mouse holding a bunch of guns. I don't know. A Portuguese website is claiming that the next Nintendo Switch will be backwards compatible, and that current Switch games can benefit from the additional processing power as well. Eurogamer has pulled this news together, but that's the original report is from Universo Nintendo. And that's pretty much the that's pretty much the extent of it. And I guess that makes some sense. So okay, the other bit of news here comes from Reuters. And they are claiming that this is out of a story that is largely about NVIDIA's upcoming business plans. You know, one of the things to remember is that, like, NVIDIA has quietly become one of the biggest, well, maybe not quietly, it's become one of the biggest companies in the world. Their market cap, whatever, they were bigger than Amazon for a bit there. I don't know if that's still the case stock price wise, but NVIDIA is scary large. That makes me trust them less, honestly. Anyway, there is just one bit at the bottom of this story here that is largely about, some of the things that NVIDIA is building. And so this is about them building a new business unit focused on designing bespoke chips for cloud computing firms and others, including advanced AI processors. 9 sources familiar with the plans told Reuters about this. By comparison, one source, which I assume is one of the 9, but I don't know, says that Nintendo's next console, which is expected this year, is likely to include an NVIDIA custom design. So that's been some of the discussion around, like, well, okay, the Tegra X1 that's in the current Switch is just a regular ass chip that they've made for, that's why the original Switch was so hackable, is because people were able to poke at that chip on other devices and figure out how to do wild shit with it. And so instead of using off-the-shelf parts, this would appear to be a custom design from NVIDIA, which I'm trying to think of the last time we got a custom part out of NVIDIA for consoles. Is it the original Xbox? And that's, you know, that lines up like roughly to a PC equivalent card, the Xbox hardware, but it's not. Anyway, and so that's kind of all the Switch 2 news at this point, but this is another source also saying that the console is expected out this year. Oh, right. Yeah. The NVIDIA, the graphics hardware and the PS3. You're right. That was custom stuff. So let's think about this a bit. We've got a Portuguese website saying that it will be backwards compatible and that original games can run better on the new Switch. I think that's certainly possible. Backwards compatibility, I think, makes a ton of sense for them. Again, you know, like I was talking about with some of the Xbox stuff, it's that sort of situation where it matters a lot. You know, parents care about it, right? But we do as well. It's not just parents, but it's nice when you can carry your library forward into a new console, even if, you know, I don't necessarily go back and play. When I go back to play old games, I go back to play games that are much older than that, I guess is what I would say. But if they're sticking with NVIDIA, it makes a ton of sense that they would maintain some backwards compatibility. Also, I think, you know, and this is me speaking from a non-technical position here. If we look at all of the videos online of people running Switch games on non-Switch hardware and the way that those games can be monkeyed with to run at 4K and run at higher frame rates and all of the weird stuff that people have been able to do with Switch software running on non-Switch hardware. And those are hobbyists coming up with those solutions, and you know, they aren't always perfect, and you'd be like, oh, these textures are all fucked up. It's like, yeah, well, you get what you pay for. I don't know. I find it very believable then that Nintendo could theoretically unlock frame rates or, you know, like whatever, you know, some simple upgrades, maybe not going all the way that some people have gone. But a situation where, like, you have a game that's very framey in spots, like a, you know, Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom or something like that. Like, hey, what if you could smooth all that out? What if this game ran at 60? Those are things that seem like they would be within reach of a potential successor to the Switch, I would hope. But also, when we think about how those games have run on a PC, for example, I think that Nintendo, being the company that actually knows how all of this stuff works and doesn't have to guess at it the way a lot of the hobbyist emulator developers have had to, you could see a situation where some of that performance improves, or at least smooths out games with, like, unstable frame rates, maybe being a little more likely to be more stable. You know, maybe some slightly better texture filtering. They probably don't push it as far as some of the emulator authors have, because that gets unsafe and requires a lot more testing. And that's something Nintendo is just not going to want to do. But I do find it believable that, you know, hey, some of these games would run better. And that maybe kind of heads off some of the conversation around, like, you know, does Tears of the Kingdom get released on the Switch 2? Again, maybe, you know, no, maybe not. Maybe they just keep selling it. Because if it's backwards compatible, and that story did also include that it's backwards compatible for physical cartridges, as well as not just digital downloads. Which, if that ends up being true, then I guess that means we see the same cartridge slot on the Switch 2, which doesn't seem like a massive problem. I don't know. I don't know if there's a big downside. I mean, you know, like, cartridge size being what it is, you do see some games that are like, yeah, there's sort of a game on this cartridge, but you'd better connect your Switch to the internet. Like Mortal Kombat 1 was a real, was like one of the more wild examples of like the software on that cartridge unpatched is really crazy compared to how it looks and runs and the features it has after it has been patched and all of it. Not that made the game amazing on the Switch, but it's a noticeable improvement when you patch it up for sure. But yeah, do they end up going with higher data capacity, or do they just, you know, because that stuff exists now, but like it brings up your cost of goods quite a lot when you start investing in larger cartridges and all of that sort of shit. No one wants to spend more money making these things. Though they'll probably be a lot more likely to go to $70 on more and more of these games going forward. We'll see. Yeah. Do they end up having a slightly different form factor for Switch 2 cartridges, but the port still technically allows a Switch 1 cartridge to be put in there. You know, this is any number of weird situations that could happen there. And we'll see. They probably don't. The thing they would probably like to avoid, if they can help it, is they would probably prefer it if Switch 2 cartridges do not fit into a Switch 1. Whether it's like, some kind of physical piece of protruding plastic on the side or whatever, or if they can change it up just enough. I don't know how they would do that. You know, maybe they have two ports like the friggin' DS did or something. But the reason I say that is because when you think about how wide open an original Switch is, if the cartridges can fit into the old Switch, even the games won't run, but you could probably dump them. They probably wouldn't want that. So if they can change that cartridge port or change those cartridges for the new Switch just enough to prevent that from happening, they would probably like that. From a security perspective. But we'll see how all that goes. Obviously, there's more work involved to that process than just jamming the cartridge in the port. But, you know, people are resourceful. That's going to do it for the news. I am anxious to see this thing on Thursday. I might stream it, it's a podcast. I don't know. That's a weird thing, but I might end up streaming myself, like listening to that, talking about, like, I guess watching it, because they are putting it on YouTube. I'm very curious to see what they do end up announcing. I feel like I've got it right, but I could be wildly wrong. Maybe they'll have a much longer and much more detailed strategy to roll out. I don't think anything that they could say this week is going to change the weird anger that people have, like the weird fanboy fervor has riled up. I don't think anything that they'll say about putting things out in a multi-platform capacity, I don't think any. I think that those weird people will be angry just the same, and they will, you know, many of them will, I'm sure, will find their way back into the fold somehow and be like, I love Microsoft again, whatever they say. I don't know. I'm Team Green, or, you know, whatever. Tim Dog will be back somehow. Wait, people only follow me because I'm angry about Xbox stuff. What am I going to do if I don't do that? Oh no. They'll find a way. So yeah, I don't know. That is something I'm looking into doing. I would love to know how long that thing is going to be, because the longer it is, the less likely I'll be able to do it, just from a scheduling and time perspective. with the kids and everything. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it all goes. And, I'm tentatively planning to watch that live. Let's get on to some emails, huh? Podcast@guard.bike is the email address. You can, send me an email. There's a chance that I will see it. Like Cody from Roswell, who says, is there anything out there that replicates the Killzone 2 and 3 or Shadowfall multiplayer? I miss the multiplayer game mode. Cody, I don't think so. There are modes. The thing I liked about Killzone was they had that one mode that was meant to be a much longer experience that like encompassed all of the other gameplay types. It'd be like, you'd play one round that was team deathmatch, and then it would be like, suddenly it would be like a VIP mode, and then suddenly it would be like capture the flag. And it was like this interesting variety that made the conflict feel larger, if that makes any sense. And I thought that was really cool. And I don't think anyone else has quite done that. I mean, you know, the larger battlefield and some of that stuff, you could argue that the Call of Duty ground war mode kind of does. You know, it, at least it does that. You know, it doesn't do the modes. It doesn't do the that type of conflict, but it does happen on a larger scale. But I can't think of anything. Someone in chat says Gears 5 sort of does it. Section 8 has a similar system with its dynasty. Section 8. Jesus. What are we doing? What is this? What are we doing hanging out here talking about Section 8 over here, huh? No, I can't think of anything that that readily duped that style of mode. But it was cool. It was a cool idea. I don't know. I would fuck with that, I suppose. Dave writes in and says, curious to ask, which console or handheld do you think was most affected by piracy? There's multiple examples of ones where emulation became viable during the middle of the console's lifetime, but which was most disastrous in your opinion? I think it's probably the PSP. The Dreamcast is maybe a close second there. But I think the custom firmware situation on the PSP was truly wild. It happened quite early. The Dreamcast stuff ended up being weird because you still had to burn the discs and there were still... the discs were larger than blank CDs, and so it relied on people going out there and ripping the cutscenes out or down-resing them to smaller, lower bit rates so that they could fit on a CD and some of that weird stuff. And so it was... The thing I'll say about PSP stuff is that was a situation that could happen very casually and without a lot of additional hardware. And that was the sort of thing that, like, once you got custom firmware installed on a PSP and your friends did too or whatever, like, it was very easy to be like, oh, you bought that game? Cool. Let me hold it for 20 minutes over here. And then you're suddenly running, I was going to say wood dumper, but no, was it Filer? You're running Filer and dumping discs to your memory stick Duo. I guess just the regular memory stick. The Duos were for the Vita. I forget, man. Memory sticks. The format of the future. Mini discs and memory sticks. UMDs. Sony had it all figured out. So I think the PSP ended up being a little more devastating. Well, you know, the Dreamcast situation was super fucking bad. Because the situation with Dreamcast stuff is that allowed people to sell silvers. That allowed, like, shady shops to be like, we've got all these games. Come in and buy them for $4. And so even people who weren't, like, well-versed in how to handle shit on the internet and how to handle a CD burner themselves and all of this other stuff, you could end up getting your hands on bootleg Dreamcast games, you know, all the time. There was, man, there was a shop up the street from the original GameSpot office on Clement Street. I talked about it a few times. And it was just like generic, like Asian, just like anime store. You know, it was like, oh, you got Goku in here? And they're like, yeah, we got Goku in here. Come on in. And then in the back was just like a rack of PS1 games of legit, just legit, full on HK Silvers, baby. Like the shittiest photocopied looking Tomb Raider cover and all of that. And they were just selling games out the back of this fucking store for like $8 a piece. I remember going in there a handful of times and being like, oh my God. Like I ended up buying a copy of Tomb Raider there because it was so soon after the, they might've been selling Tomb Raider before it came out. It might've been like a late beta or something insane like that. I can't remember the specifics of it, but like I bought that and a game called Racing Groovy, that never came out in the US, I don't think, and a couple of other games that were just like super, it was just super sketchy, but like their stock never rotated. Like they ended up in you know, getting a handful of games there, and then just those were the games they had for years and years and years, and so it was rare they ever got new stock, so it was pointless. But they were not CDRs, they were silvers, so I don't, you know, at the time there, those were kind of different things. And so they were getting them from somewhere. I don't know. They weren't just burning them there is my point. Probably, but who the fuck knows? But yeah, the Dreamcast situation was super bad. But I don't think like that to people try to kind of pin the problems with the Dreamcast very directly on the piracy. So the situation, if you are not familiar, it is possible to burn discs that just boot in an unmodified Dreamcast, no mod chip, no nothing. And for a while there was like a boot disc situation where, like, I guess like the thing that you used to do it was on that Sega Smash Pack disc, and there's like straight up info files on Sega Smash Pack of just like the people that made that were fucking crazy. They're cool. So they, but it happened before Smash Pack came out though, didn't it? Maybe the method came out in a different format first or something. And anyway, that thing got blown wide open. And, you know, very late in the game, I think they issued Dreamcasts that did not have, like, mil CD support or whatever you want to call it. That's what it was. Smash Pack had instructions. Smash Pack had Genesis emulator stuff in it that you could use to load other ROMs. It's also, like, a really rotten emulator. But the Dreamcast failed because of the calls that Sega made, and the PlayStation 2, you know, there was just a lot of stuff like that. The piracy certainly did not help, but it was not the sole reason why the Dreamcast collapsed. And the PSP, I don't know that I would necessarily say that it collapsed due to piracy. I would say the problem with PSP is, you know, it was not quite as bad as the Vita in some ways, but Sony never fully supported the PSP the same way they never fully supported the Vita. It's the benefit of the Switch. It's like the real power of the Nintendo Switch lies in it being the only platform Nintendo has. Whereas when Nintendo would split their efforts across a handheld and a platform, you know, like they sometimes the handheld would not get the best games because the best games were going to console and so on and so forth. And so I think that that's definitely the situation with the PSP and definitely with the Vita, where it's like, hey man, we put an Uncharted game out on the Vita. It's not made by Naughty Dog, but you know, hey, it's an Uncharted game, you know? And so you had like the other studios that like were doing the handheld versions. It was like the same type of situation where it's like, who do we get to do this? Oh, you're going to port this game? Oh, well, let's get the same port house that did the PS2 version of this PS3 game. We could also do this, or, you know, the PS2 version of the PS1 game, or the PS1, you know, the Shaba Games out here doing Tony Hawk 3 for the PlayStation 1, or, you know, whatever the fuck it is. You ended up in those sorts of situations where it's just like, you know, and I think Sony just never sent its best to its handhelds. And so I love the PSP. I think the PSP is cool as fuck. The Vita less so. But the Vita is fine. You know, the Vita is really neat in its own way. I just feel like there were more great PSP games than there were great Vita games, you know? And you could hack your battery on a PSP. That's just fucking bananas. A hacked battery. Ben from Minneapolis writes in and says, Midway producer Mark Flitman just released a book called It's Not All Fun and Games, and he cites your MLB Slugfest 2003 review for enjoying the game's commentary. What do you think of Slugfest in retrospect, and do you remember the game's credits? Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Slugfest, I think, was the one other sports game that Midway... Well, hockey. They did good with hockey. Hits was okay. But really, it's that Wayne Gretzky game they did for N64 that was actually probably better. Slugfest was cool. It was weird. The commentary was funny. Like they got Tim Kitstrow in there with a guy who, you know, in the credits, I don't even think it had his real name. It's just, you know, it's Jimmy Shorts. So who is mystery? Who is Jimmy Shorts? And they did a really good two-man booth where they were just goofing the whole time. And it felt like in the moment, it felt improv-y at times. It didn't feel like a bunch of canned, overwrought, overplanned humor. Like the commentary was just it was a good time. Slugfest was a fun game for a genre of game that I feel like doesn't really get much these days. You know, what do we have? Is there still Super Mega Baseball? Like, that's the closest we get to a fun time, fun baseball game, right? Slugfest had some good, weird ideas around ways to try to apply Midway's kind of Smash Mouth sports style to a baseball game. I'll tell you this, Slugfest 2003, a much greater success than the Red Card Soccer games. You're like, yeah, we need an extreme soccer game. What should we call it? Red Card Soccer. Fuck yeah. Like, it's, I have a Red Card Soccer referee jersey here that I should really be wearing more often. And the credits are funny because their build is like, it's bloopers. But it's really just like a bunch of bits they shot where the team decides they want to be in the game. And as such, it's a bunch of shots of Sal DeVita in motion capture gear beating the shit out of the people who worked on the game. Like just doing drop kicks into them while they're all wearing mocap gear. And, you know, it's, you know, I don't think they actually. It's a work. It's not a shoot. But yeah, it's a funny bit. And then some fun extra little commentary stuff in there that's staged. It's all very staged for an outtakes reel as opposed to actual bloopers or whatever. But it's like, yeah, the credits are very silly. There's a video here. Go look up the credits for MLB Slugfest 2003 when you get a chance. They're fun. They're fun in a way that games aren't anymore, if that makes any sense. They're fun in a way that makes the game feel like it was made by humans. It has this old-timey... Like, go watch the credits for MLB Slugfest 2003 because they're quaint. in a way that just video games aren't anymore. Man, I just bummed myself out thinking about fucking MLB Slugfest 2003. That's right. It's 20, and then then there's a dash, and then an 03 to make sure you pronounce it as 2003, as opposed to just 2003. A weird marketing, some weird choices. Weird choices made at Midway in the early 2000s. Breaking news. Gregory writes in with an urgent question. Says urgent question, not a joke. When Axl Rose asked Guns N' Roses to give him some reggae, did they give him the adequate amount? No, but they gave him the amount that he deserved. Thank you for writing. Steve from Kingston upon Hull in the United Kingdom says, I see Snoop and Dre are releasing a gin and juice cocktail in a can. I know you don't drink alcohol much anymore, but can we get a review on the podcast? I can review it for you right here, right now. Gin is disgusting. Gin is the worst. A prepackaged gin drink, I bet, will be even more terrible than that. So yes, if I see it, I'll let you know. I took a picture of it this morning. I'll post this somewhere. I took a picture at the 7-Eleven this morning when I was going out to get some energy drinks of a can of Four Loko. It was next to one that is Warheads branded. There's a Sour Cosmic Punch Four Loko. But this Loko is just billed as Loko USA. And I don't know what America tastes like. And it's been a long time since I've had a Four Loko. But I almost bought one. I might go back and buy an American flavored Four Loko. Because it's America, goddammit. Greg from Kansas writes and says, has there ever been a time or times when you've questioned whether gaming was going to make it? Was there ever a time when you felt like you didn't know what the gaming industry was anymore? For me, that E3 where the Kinect was first shown off made me think, maybe video games aren't for me anymore. Not really. It's something I've been like, as some of this Xbox talk has been happening, and as a lot of the talk around layoffs, of course, layoffs intermingled with the dramatically insane budgets we're seeing for some of the biggest video games these days. Hundreds of millions of dollars being spent on a single game that you play, and you're like, this is very good. It is an open world superhero game. I mean, it is not surprising in the way I would think you would get more for your, but it is an incredibly sharp game. Don't get me wrong. I do like this a lot, but holy shit, that's a lot of money. All of that stuff kind of makes me wonder when we hit some kind of breaking point. And I think in some ways that breaking point could be crucial to restoring the overall health of this industry. You know, when you go back a few weeks to, was it gamesindustry.biz or was it gamedeveloper.com? Whoever had the 2 years of pain article that we talked about a few weeks ago. Something has to give, right? For the correction to start. It's got to bottom out first, right? And then you have this week Ubisoft talking about Skull and Bones and saying it's a quadruple A game. And you're like, that's not Let's not. I know that's occasionally a term that people try to use. No, it's not. I mean, you know, but if we think about it in terms of, like, you got to remember that the AAA designation was only ever meant to talk about the budget of a game. It was never, you know, and the marketing push it may get as a result and so on and so forth. But, like, it was never designed as something to talk about the quality of a game. Skull and Bones is out this week, right? Is it? I'm kidding. It's this five. It'll come out five, you know, 2029. We'll be playing Skull and Bones. No, but they've been running or the early access today. Skull and Bones is out now. What a world. First Fortnite, now this. Video games have become real. Skull and Bones gave me that Fortnite vibe, which is an insane sentence to say when we think about what Fortnite is now. But remember all the years of Fortnite being, like, in the shadows and, like, what is Fortnite? I don't know. What even is it? We don't, you know, it's like something Epic's working on. Game Informer's got this cover story and then didn't even really talk about what the fuck it was. And then, you know, like, what the fuck is Fortnite? Like, all of that. And then, you know, and then I finally got to play Fortnite at an E3 Judges Week. And I remember going, like, okay, yeah, cool. Yeah. This is neat. It was neat to play with people right then and there. Getting a 4-player game and, yeah, I don't know, man. All right, hit the button and the hordes are going to come. And now we've got to build defenses. Like, okay, yeah, you're doing like a tower defense thing. Sure. That makes sense. Cool. All right. That's a video game. It's a real game. I played it. Crazy to think where we are today with Fortnite. But Skull and Bones gave me that vibe of just like, I'm not even sure what this game is anymore after all these years. Like, are you really making a game based on the boat stuff from an Assassin's Creed game that is now, is it 15 years old? Is it, is it quadruple A in budget because you've spent a decade on it and that's why you have to try to, you know, like, okay. I feel like people coming out of the Skull and Bones open beta, which I installed but forgot to launch, are saying, hey, this is actually kind of worse in some ways than the boat stuff from that from Black Flag, which is weird. I don't know. I'm curious to play the full version of Skull and Bones, which I will surely do at some point. Especially if it's apparently out. What a world! But no, in terms of just like do I ever feel like shook or do I ever like wonder about video games? No, like video games will continue to change forms and shift and it may someday shift into a form that you don't like anymore. I think that's a totally possible and acceptable thing. I have been through a lot of changes and found myself still enjoying video games. You know, there were a lot of people that, like, around the 360 era of microtransactions, you know, they started getting very angry and never stopped being angry. And, you know, I get it. But, like, you know, the business model of video games is always going to be changing. It feels like we're thousands of years past horse armor. Now, you know, like ultimately it wasn't that long ago in the grand scheme, but it feels like a lifetime or two or five ago. Back then, for me, some of the stuff that I remember from the early microtransactions era is when Tiger Woods came out and they would sell you a full stats golfer. If you didn't want to, level up your golfer, your created player, they would sell you one. And once we started selling cheat codes, to me that felt like, all right, we've broken some kind of like pact here between the players and the games. Like, this is like that was a fun thing. Like cheat codes used to be a fun thing. Like, what are the last great cheat codes? What's the last great cheat code? It's like San Andreas, right? It's all of the cheat codes in San Andreas when you could unlock all the weird shit and just blow shit up forever. And now, you know, like we just don't, you know, when the 360 rolled out and achievements rolled out, you know, games, yeah, GTA 4 did have them. So I guess maybe GTA 4 ends up counting. But for me is when codes went away, and especially when in some cases some people were trying to, or some companies rather, were trying to sell you the equivalent of cheat codes. And it's kind of the downside of achievements and trophies and the ecosystem and you know, earning all this stuff and keeping, you know, like having, it's the same reason that free map packs and player run servers and all of that sort of stuff kind of went away, right? And yeah, I don't know, man. Like I that's a big dramatic change, but I found my way to the other side of that. I remember being really pissed off about I believe it was Battlefield Bad Company 1. And I bring this up more often than it probably warrants it or whatever, but there was a time when for Bad Company EA intended to sell you guns. They were like, we got these handful of guns that this is going to be like this paid tier, or, you know, like there's like five guns you can get as DLC, or some of them will come with the first run copies of the game or whatever it is. And, you know, these guns, it's quaint now to think about the idea of selling variants of guns, which is something that obviously Call of Duty does every single day. And then there was an outcry about that. There was an outcry about the idea of guns as DLC. You know, these were unlockable in other games. And so the change that EA made was, okay, well, we'll give you these guns if you sign up for our newsletter instead. And then you won't have to pay any money. And the people who were angry were like, yay, we did it. And I was like, you stupid fucking idiots. The minuscule amount of money they were going to charge for these guns that you don't even really need anyway is worth way less than them being able to fucking market to you. You fucking rubes. Ugh. But yeah, I don't know. But for me, it was the rise of the smartphone and mobile gaming. That to me felt like the existential threat to video games. And that's a long time ago now. Now it's like this, they coexist, and, you know, the game industry loves to tout how many people play video games and how much money video games make. But like the traditional video game business never likes to break down how exactly that's possible and where exactly that money comes from and how very popular many mobile games truly are. And so I think a lot about, you know, like the 20 years down the line, 30 years down the line, whatever, you know, it ends up being, generationally speaking, do kids still care about video games, the type of video games that we care about now, the traditional console game, the, you know, the first person shooter on PC, like those sorts, you know, like those sorts of games, or does that stuff go away? And the rise of games like Fortnite and, you know, the rise of that style of game, as much as that game is on mobile somewhere, theoretically, kind of, you know, and the way that streaming happens and all of that stuff, I think that ends up being something that you look at and go like, oh, okay, actually, yeah, games keep going in a sense, but the way they go on, the way that Fortnite is free to play, the way that Warzone is free to play. You know, we used to kind of think about back when the consoles and PC were a little bit more split. I think there was a lot of hand wringing on the PC side of things about the way console gaming was going and the way that console gaming was kind of infesting the mentality of PC games. And we ended up seeing that kind of, I think it hit its crescendo with something like Modern Warfare 2. The big boycott, and everyone was like, I'm not playing Modern Warfare 2 because they're gonna sell me maps instead of letting me download maps like every other shooter and every other game, you know, like when the PC market became a lot more like the console market in terms of being able to sell you DLC, which is really, you know, hey, PC games were selling expansion packs years before any of that happened. It was just compressed into a pack instead of like, what if you could buy one new unit? Remember when Total Annihilation was putting units on the front of magazine cover discs? And it was just like, do you want a new unit for Total Annihilation? It's on this fucking CD. You're like, what? You know, there's a lot of weird shit. But the people on the PC side of things, I think, felt the similarly to how maybe some console people do now. In terms of just like, hey, this thing that I've loved for a decade or more is going away, or it is changing in ways that I'm not okay with, whether that is some of these games are becoming a lot more simple or a lot more console games are coming to PC. And back then, those console ports were hyper fucked up because controllers weren't standardized. And, you know, in the pre-360 era, in the pre-USB era, playing console style games on a PC was a totally different fucking ball game. And so you had, you know, all these deep, you know, 4X games and all, you know, adventure games, point and click adventure games, like these genres that just kind of vanished. And then it's not to say that that happened because of consoles, you know, tastes change no matter what, but there was, I think, a certain amount of just like this seismic shift of the types of games that were coming to players all over the place. And now, you know, like, they've unified to the point where PCs and consoles are getting largely the same games, and they're largely the same hardware underneath and all of that sort of stuff. So it didn't end up, and also we've seen this kind of re-rise of a lot of these, what we think of as these grognard ass fucking PC genres. I mean, Baldur's Gate fucking 3 exists, came out, won awards, and even somehow fucking managed to come to consoles, which is crazy. That's wild. And so I think the thing that we're seeing now these days is that, you know, anything is possible if you've got the right budget for it. And if you're being responsible with money and you're thinking about different sizes of games. And instead of just like this arms race of, let's spend $400 million this time. Let's chase, you know, like trying to outspend and trying to make the biggest, shiniest thing possible. And instead going like, okay, here's what this size team, we can make this if you're scoping properly, blah, blah, blah. You know, I think we can see a lot of different games at a lot of different sizes and scopes and see them be successful across a lot of different genres that appeal to different types of player. And I think that that's overall healthy, but at the end of the day, you know, it is very easy to freak out about the traditional, you know, we talked about last week when we were talking about midnight launches of console games and how that doesn't happen anymore and why that doesn't happen anymore. We're talking, you know, it factors in very directly to where Xbox is right now, where Xbox's classic franchises have fallen out of favor for one reason or another. Whether it's because they didn't put them out often enough or just like that genre of game, you know, at some point the conversation turned on Gears of War and people don't remember it as fondly as maybe they used to, or, you know, like there's, you know, and yeah, maybe they went back to the well too many times on Gears and too many times on Halo and, you know, like, and whatever else, you could argue that they kind of did it to themselves. and they needed to innovate more directly, more frequently than they did with their bigger franchises, and that they would have ended up in this hole even if the pandemic didn't happen. That's entirely possible. I don't know. You could argue that Bungie, the shift from Bungie to 343 being not smooth, ended up turning a lot of player sentiment on Halo in a way that, you know, maybe in some cases it didn't even deserve. Or didn't deserve long term. Probably deserved at the time. I don't know. I think that we're in the middle of another one of those big shifts, but this time it's sort of like how print magazines got squeezed out by the websites, and now the websites are getting squeezed out by official channels / the sponsored streamer, you know, whatever it is, influencers, whatever we want to call them. I think that you could maybe make the case, and I'm working through this in my head right now, so this is not a clean analogy, but you could potentially make the case that what I was talking about with regards to PC gaming changing and being morphed into this kind of more compact, more commercialized, more consoleized thing. You know, maybe we'll see another shift like that that really goes harder into the mobile territory. Or rather, I guess maybe it's not so much the platform, but, you know, we do see some of this with the live service game, right? Where live service games on paper solve a ton of problems for a publisher. Like, oh, if we require a server connection, then, you know, we can cut off some cheats directly by requiring a server connection. We can drop piracy down to basically zero if we're authenticating at the server level and doing that properly. We can have players play the same game for 5 years, you know, and on paper, I'm sure that all sounds amazing. Actually staffing and building a game that's good enough to warrant that and is frequent enough with its updates and on top of it well enough to be worth playing for that length of time, obviously is a much harder story. But it hasn't stopped more and more developers from, or more and more publishers rather, from chasing after that style of game. And yes, but at the same time, yes, Lethal Company is huge. You know, that's a very small thing, you know. Terraria was a huge video game. There's just a lot of stuff happening at different levels that make this stuff morph and change and shift. But I do think that, you know, the conversation around the big $60, now $70 AAA game does have to change. And I think that's why when we talk about Microsoft and what they're going through and what they're figuring out and the things that they're trying to do to change up their business, and we talk about them in relation to Sony and the PlayStation, what's the thing that PlayStation has done? Nothing. They've been able to say, no, we're the company that is still just selling you these big, great games. It's a great place to be in. But also, of course, behind the scenes, they're sitting there going like, okay, we want to make 12 live service games by this time frame, and we need to buy this studio that does this. We need to, you know, they're thinking about that stuff too. And I think that when we look at some of the Spider-Man 2 stuff and how expensive that game apparently was to make and how unreasonable that seems, how long does that work for them? Are they going to be met by market forces in a different way than Microsoft has been? And what are they going to do when it happens? You see, you know, like, oh, could we make shorter? There was there's a piece in Edge this month where they're talking to Sean Layden, former head of PlayStation, about the budgets on games and how fucking bananas they are and how it is totally unsustainable. And like, hey, can we make shorter games? Can we not waste a bunch of money making a bunch of grindable content and instead just make a razor sharp, shorter experience? I'm like, maybe you could, but like, is that $70? You get people into weird value conversations again at that point. Yeah, man, there's a lot of stuff that I think is just kind of hanging by a thread's not the word for it, but I think there's a lot of stuff right now that I think when we look at where this business is in 5 years, and you could say this about any 5 years, it's video games, things fucking change fast. But I think right now, with what we're seeing, with what Microsoft is probably about to do, with some of the things that Sony would love to be doing better at, and where, you know, discoverability on the shops and indie games getting lost in the shuffle and just like all of these different weird forces around a game release that are really fucking things up for a lot of people. It feels like we're in this zone where things are going to change. And you know, is it going to be better? Is it going to be worse? I don't know. You know, like I don't know. So maybe things change to the point where you say, oh, they've changed in such a way that I am no longer interested in playing video games. I think that that's very possible at any given time, for sure. But I've rolled with a lot of punches so far, and I don't know, man. I just fucking like video games. Not like the video game business. It's an interesting thing to look at from the outside for as long as I have. And so, you know, I hope to continue doing that. for a very long time, but yeah, I don't know. I guess that's a long answer for you, Greg from Kansas. Hopefully that made some kind of coherent sense along the way. Very quickly here before we go, I've been thinking a lot about Minecraft in relation to some of this Xbox stuff. And Minecraft as a multi-platform game, and Minecraft as an example of a game that Microsoft acquired and then started to do things to. I like Minecraft, but did you ever notice that whenever you see shots of anything in Minecraft that is truly revolutionary looking, that you look at something that you're like, oh my God, look at this crazy fucking Minecraft. Look at this. Hey, come over here and look at this. It's never Microsoft's current. It's not Bedrock. It's never the current Minecraft. But it's always fucking Java Minecraft. It's always people installing the jankiest shit in the world and going like, all right, man, here's how you fucking install Optifine. First, you're going to install Java on your computer. And you're like, the fuck I am. I'm going to reinstall Optifine. It's been a long time. There's a runtime in the Minecraft directory that you can use to do all of that without having to install new Java or whatever. But Microsoft's Minecraft, it's all theirs. I don't mean to pin it, but the current, the new, the modern version of Minecraft sucks by comparison. You know, they added their microtransactions and you can buy some skins and services. And like, that's fine. You know, hey, I don't necessarily hate that stuff. But like, the point is, none of that shit ever, none of the cool shit from real ass old school Minecraft ever made its way over. And I don't know if it's not possible or if just people are just not into it because they're so ingrained in, you know, running these jars, downloading these hot jars. It's a bummer. Remember they announced RTX support? They're like, we've added ray tracing to Minecraft. But to like do that in the PC version of Minecraft, because it never came to the Xbox version, even though they kind of seemed like it was going to, and I think did for a couple of days before they're like, oh shit, we pushed, oh geez. You still have to go download this ancient, like, NVIDIA-produced texture pack to really get the most out of it, and it's still, like, fucked. It's still this janky procedure to even get that stuff working, and no one's really built on top of it. No one's really said, like, oh, you've got ray tracing supporting? Oh, we built all this other cool shit on, you know, there's, like, NVIDIA has a world in their store still that's like, look at it, there's a neon world, and this works with RTX. And you're like, all right, what about just regular-ass Minecraft or some fancy, crazy, ridiculous textures? Like, no, no, that's on some dude's Patreon. You gotta hit up Patreon, download the pack, and then that's unzip that to your resources directory, and then fire up Optifine or whatever the fuck you're doing. You know, and are you using Minecraft Forge? Yes or no? Absolutely not. Never, never in a million years would I run Minecraft Forge. Okay, well, here's what you need to do. Like, it's just crazy to me that a game that has been as big as Minecraft has not been treated better or integrated more directly, like the bedrock version of Minecraft has not, you know, been built in a way that is, you know, capable of just like, oh, hey, you can get these textures for the Java version and run them here. You know, there was no, and I'm sure that's hard. I'm sure that's not, otherwise they would have done it, right? But it feels like there hasn't been an equivalent of like, hey, here's, we're going to do this, and now here's the new hot, crazy shit with ray tracing running on Minecraft and on the PC. I just want an easy experience to make Minecraft look beautiful and crazy. But it's not there. It's the Java version of Minecraft. It's going and grabbing it, and then, you know, well, you know, whatever. Installing it is easy. But it's like getting shader packs, getting resource packs, using Optifine to just manage all that stuff to some degree, and all, like, it just, Minecraft never got where it seems like it should have gone after the Microsoft acquisition, after the release of Bedrock. Like, it just feels like that version, like, it might have feature parity with the old version and all of that sort of stuff as best they can, but it's a letdown. And I'm not even a massive Minecraft fan, so maybe there's people who are massive Minecraft fans who are more pissed off, or they've just written off the Bedrock version completely, and they're just like, yeah, I'm a big Minecraft fan. Why would I ever touch that version of the game? Like, all right, I guess. Yeah. Maybe that's the actual answer. Anyway, I just had to get that off my chest because it bums me out. And Microsoft should have done a better job with Minecraft post-acquisition. And I don't know what circumstances... I don't know why that's the case, but it feels like some shit went wrong. Remember they were like, we got our super duper graphics pack coming. Like, that never materialized, right? Something with Minecraft must have just gone super fucking sideways one of these days. I don't know. Anyway, tomorrow we'll play some video games. I don't know what we'll play. Probably some Helldivers, honestly. I need to play some more Helldivers. So maybe I'll get into some Helldivers. We'll stream some of that tomorrow. And then Thursday is Microsoft's big announcement. I am trying to make a schedule. I'm trying to reschedule some things so that I can watch that live and we can hang out and figure it all out together. And then Friday we'll do some 8-bit Nintendo games. You know, head on over to Patreon if you haven't. Patreon.com/Jeff Gerstmann. I should really mention that at the top of the show, because the people listening to the end probably know about it already. And thank you for knowing about it and hopefully signing up. Patreon.com/Jeff Gerstmann. Head over there. Bonus shows. Bonus content. Keep the nightmare machine alive. And I will see you soon.